the one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
Wanna chat with the guys?
Friend Blink.
That's not how I wanted to announce that either.
This is Brooke's poem about what's going on.
Oh my god, he's about to fucking read it.
Is the poem called Manjaw?
Jesus Christ. My father has a daughter, and I have feelings too, and if I knew your father, I would do the same for you.
Motherfucker, fucker.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am no longer straight edge after having to sit here and listen to that.
There was this one comment that I saw where this one dude said, not even remotely good. So I click on his Facebook and all of his photos are him with his two young sons at TNA events. You know, if they make a wish kids, I bet they wish they were a rock.
Friend Blink.
Brother. There. Perfect. That was it. That was the Hogan audio right there, man.
Don't trust Rick Dara.
Something gay must have happened to you and you didn't like it, so now you like your hate, you're mad against the world. Like, get over it.
When you said something gay must have happened in the past and they didn't like it, I thought you meant like buying Batman Arkham Knight for PC.
No, it's just like
why are you so pissed off? Something gay happened to me. I bought the PC version of Batman Arkham Knight.
Friend Blink.
And the looks on their faces, it almost seems like TNA doesn't have fans, they have victims. And there's people who defend it to me, man. There's listeners that we have that defend it to me. They'll privately message me and they'll literally justify everything. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. They'll explain every single illogical thing.
Justify that lollipop.
You see, you could talk about old wrestling without saturating your show with it, and it still works.
Cool those jabs tonight, man. I should introduce you as Ronda Rousey next time.
Goodness. Rowdy Ronda Rousey.
Thank you, gay Jesus.
Hey. Casting aside their regular work to try this other thing. You see, that's how you become a comedian. You know, that's some initiative.
What about me? Then the crowd goes, what about Beretta?
You can't have that. Can't just give that to Trent Beretta. No way.
Yeah. What the hell was that? Man, I don't even know what that was.
That was...
Yeah. Alright. Talk Brunch pre-show is in the house. Ah, good to be back for another week of this stuff. How's it going, everyone? Welcome to the Talk Brunch pre-show. I have a lot to talk about tonight. With me, as always, is Mick Wrestling.
What's going on?
Same old, man. How have you been doing?
I've been doing okay. I've actually been doing pretty great. I actually wanted to ask you a couple of episodes back, but we always get sidetracked after the intro. In the actual intro, when I'm like, thank you, gay Jesus, and then we all start laughing, and somebody goes, hey, is that you, or was that the other guy?
No, that was me. You mean the hey? That?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was me.
All right, mystery solved.
You don't remember when that happened, huh?
We've done so many episodes at this point, that's like old school now.
Yeah, and for the record, anyone listening, we weren't making a mockery of Jesus in that. What happened was, a UFC fighter named Yoel Romero had a victory speech where he said something like, America, what's wrong with you? Go for Jesus, not gay Jesus. And this was in response to the whole fact that there's now gay marriage. And McWrestling, I just found it such a ridiculous comment that he said gay Jesus, that it just became sort of a parody where we said, you know, from now on, whenever Yoel Romero fights, we're always going to root against him for being a bit of a close-minded douche. And yeah, so now we kind of, yeah, we're sarcastically thanking gay Jesus in honor of Yoel Romero, or in dishonor rather. But yeah, it's been pretty wild, man. We have some listener comments here, and I'm only going to do them because I need to get them out of the way or I'm going to forget. And then I feel awful when I forget.
Yeah, we get backed up a lot.
Yeah, so we'll do a few of these. Anyone who doesn't get squeezed in today, don't worry. We haven't forgotten about you. We hold on to all of these. It's just that we'll also, it's like a double-edged sword, because if we forget to talk about content because we filled it up with listener stuff, then we're double fucked. But anyway, first person is Jose Regoza, who we hear from all the time. And he says, what's up, fellow marks? Hashtag, I made it. Ha 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 ha. I still remember that epic roulette wheel episode you guys did. Once again, another great podcast from you guys. Keep up the good work. And yeah, man, thanks for the shout out. I'm going to say though, we were so corny back then. Like, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing when we were running this back then. It was a completely different show. Like, I appreciate the acknowledgement. But it wasn't Talk Brunch. That wasn't Talk Brunch. Like, not this Talk Brunch.
I'm shocked. Like, we had a listener from that far back.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And that was one of his favorite episodes.
Yeah. Like, I think that we as people and as a brand have evolved into like a completely different monster. You know, and the exciting thing about it is that we're growing more and more every day. So I don't, it's cool to think about those, but I almost cringe when I wish I knew as much then as I knew now.
Yeah, right? It's a learning process, man. You live and learn.
Yeah, because a lot of the stuff is cringe worthy. And who knows? I'm sure we'll look back at this and say the same shit eventually.
Yeah.
but we're coming along. I'm happy. I'm definitely happy. We have World's Worst Gamer, which I actually know. And he put Talk Brunch hashtag, I made it. So yes,
nice.
Awesome. I'm liking this. I'm liking people making it. We have Philo Sarcasm.
nice name.
Yeah, he says, finally got a chance to listen to Talk Brunch. This is some good shit. I crack the fuck up when Talk Brunch gets into the legal issues and you hear the Law and Order theme, LOL. And that's actually Marcus Harris from Freaks and Geeks. Yeah, and it's funny because I cracked up when I read this because, no bullshit, man, I happened to be listening to his show when this popped up. I just, you know, sometimes I'll just have the Rant EM station on just because, you know, we're part of the station now. So I just sort of go on there. Just, I'll have it on in the background if I'm doing something. I'm writing my episode, gaming or whatever. I'll just have it on because they randomly have the shows playing throughout the week. And something with him was on where they were. And also AA was on there. They got AA in it. I guess they were trying to do some calls to places. They were trying to call Walmarts at first, but AA broke out some Dateline. yeah. And it was crazy because it was almost like a phone equivocal of Craigslist. Like, you leave like a message, and then if the girl on the other side likes you, she'll listen to the message, and then she'll leave one. And then the hotline connects the two of you, and they got connected to a girl, and they're like macking to this girl and shit, while the other people on the line stay quiet. It was really fucking funny, man. Like, just the entire setup and concept of it. I was rolling. I'm literally sitting there in anticipation of what's going to happen. You know, and then it broke into a live show that was happening. So I'm like, oh shit, a live show. I totally forgot that this was going to happen. And it was Phil Reyes' show. And I really didn't mind that because, you know, I like turnbuckle throwbacks. So I'm listening to that. But I'm still thinking about the fact that it broke into that. And funny, when the live show ends, it continued back into that. So I got to hear like the conclusion of it. I was like, yeah, it went back to what it was doing before.
Yeah, that sounds like a cool little segue.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. Really a lot of fun. I'm really liking being part of this whole Rant EM experience that we're having with everyone. We'll go into that a little bit more later on, actually. But yeah, I'm enjoying the fact that he enjoyed the episode and everything that we were doing. Few things I wanted to discuss before we get into The Walking Dead. Yes, even though we didn't promise, and even though we never said we were going to commit to it after Fear the Walking Dead, we're going to review the season premiere of the actual Walking Dead. And those are way harder to review than that basic, simple show we were watching for the last six episodes.
We're more invested into this show.
But first and foremost, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Star Wars Battlefront beta, which I got a chance to play a little bit of over the weekend.
Lucky bastard. I didn't get an invite.
Lucky, I don't know. It's actually free to everyone.
Is it now?
Yeah, it's free to download. I'm pretty sure.
How did I not see that?
I don't know. Yeah, it was everywhere, man. But yeah, I tried it out,
and I don't know if I would say lucky. It's a gorgeous game. Visually, it looks good. Mm-hmm. Phil and I actually talked about this off air because he went to Comic-Con, I believe, on Friday, and he met the Surfer. And the two of them were there, and he said...
I saw them post that up on my Facebook earlier.
Right, right. And he mentioned that he was in front of the Star Wars Battlefront booth, because I was pitching to him the idea of us doing some Twitch live streams of us playing the beta.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was saying it's a great game, and he's thinking of getting into it himself, and I was thinking of it. And when I tried it, it's very... It's only a few weeks away. Keep this in mind. So it's not like I'm judging it harshly like a beta. Odds are that what we're playing is what we're getting. This isn't like...
I mean, I feel like, not to cut you off, but every time when we do get betas and stuff and they always say this isn't the final product, I can't think in recent memory of any game where I've played the beta and when it came out, it was completely different.
Well, I don't recall this one even saying this isn't the final product. And one thing that was missing from it that most betas have, there wasn't even a place for you to send your feedback or suggestions. Like, if there was really a beta, they will want to hear about what they can do. They've already made up their minds. This shit is probably sitting somewhere already in a box. And now, based on that, the problem that I'm having with it is the matchmaking. First of all, it has a buddy system matchmaking, which basically means, despite the fact that there are giant 40 battle type game modes and stuff, you ultimately can choose one partner, and that one partner can go with you into those other modes. Other people can join the game afterwards, but as far as you assembling a full party to go in like you would do Call of Duty style, that was absent. And even though we can say it's going to be patched in, it's very, very late in the game. I don't know. And on top of that, that buddy system worked like shit. Stasis and I couldn't connect to each other, for anyone who doesn't know.
I was just about to ask. So if we're doing like how we do Destiny, where it's like, it's you, Stasis, and then me, and then you'll get the other guys. We all can't link up. It'll be like you and Stasis, and then the others. We have to hope that we get into the same lobby with you.
Yeah, and we couldn't even connect even though we were the only two people. So even that basic part of it wasn't working properly for us either. And so we couldn't get into the two-player co-op mode. The spawns were a little bit off, too. The rebel spawns, things were a little weird. It was unbalanced. It's definitely not that polished. I hate to say it because I know people in the internet will say, gobble, 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 gobble. But it's like, hey, listen, man, like, it wasn't really that polished at all. I felt like I was wasting my time somewhat. I didn't really bother with it too much. It looks great. It could be a great game, but it would need to really be dissected and a lot of things would need to be changed. So just
hopefully it's just a sloppy beta. I mean, based on like the Destiny beta we paid, that was pretty much flawless.
Yeah, exactly.
In my opinion,
this is one that I would say don't pre-order anything. Don't fall into any traps. Let it launch first. Feel it out. See what's said. Watch some Twitch streams of it yourself and then go and make an objective decision about whether or not you want to play it. I wouldn't dive into this one like I'm going to do with WWE 2K16 or Halo 5.
I'm literally like a finger away from just pre-ordering WWE, like the whole bundle with everything.
Oh, no, I'm definitely doing that probably when we get off of here. I mean, it's part of, in a sense, you could say it's almost part of our work on Talk Brunch, because I'm going to be using this and incorporating it into our podcast and into our Twitch streams and everything. It's going to become a big part of what we're doing on here. The gaming just as much as the podcasting aspect of it. So, no, that's a given.
I have some bitching to do about that, but we'll get to that in the other episode, like in the later on when we're doing the dirt sheet.
Yeah, no worries about that. But I just wanted to give my first thoughts on the Star Wars Battlefront.
Mm-hmm.
Moving along, just a gripe that I have while we're still in video gaming mode is, obviously this generation, the Xbox One has got its ass whipped, and it's justifiable. I'm an Xbox One guy, but justifiably it has got its ass whipped. They made a lot of bad decisions along the way. Hell, they still make bad decisions now. That being said, I don't believe that it is the better system. I just believe that it made the most mistakes and it paid for it the most. There are a lot of things that are more popular than other things. And it's not because they're necessarily better. It's just that they have a smaller fan base. Aside from TNA, in most cases, smaller things are just considered... yeah, couldn't help myself. Are just considered cult followings, you know? So it's not really... I don't really feel bad. If that's the more popular console, that's great. When I got the OG Xbox or the 360, it was never due to popularity, but more due to the kind of things that I do, my multitasking, just the way it fits into my kind of lifestyle as far as doing things digitally. But, you know, I see a lot of mistakes they make. And one big gripe I have is I'm watching Raw every week, SmackDown, all these other shows. Where the fuck are the Xbox commercials? All I see is Sony commercials. They're really skimping on the advertising when over at Microsoft. You rarely ever see them show off their stuff. Most of the time they use YouTube now, and they're not really doing anything to go out of their way to put themselves out there either. So I don't really feel bad. And I know you mentioned also that you have a problem with this new dashboard because we're both in the beta of the preview dashboard. So there's two things going on here because it's like, on one, I'm not impressed with the advertising, and I don't think neither of us are really impressed with that dashboard, right?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I never thought about it with the advertising because I generally don't pay attention to commercials. But when I do look up from time to time, it's commercials for Halo, commercials for Destiny, which are multi-platform games. Microsoft's really not out there saying like, hey, look, we have this coming out. Like they blew away the competition at E3, but you're not showing us any commercials on like saying, hey, remember, this is coming out, like invest mm-hmm. in this, invest in that.
And even in during Raw, the multi-platform games such as Destiny that are being shown and Battlefront, they're showing the PS4 box. They don't even mention the Xbox One. It's at a point where it doesn't seem to exist. And like I always say, I'm not salty about that kind of stuff whatsoever. Like, right. We always knew there was the possibility of this. We discussed it before these systems even launched because Microsoft very early on shit the bed with their stupid used game thing, which we all had sort of like a round table, you recall, where we said, look, they fucked up, but we're still going to go in that direction. So there's no big surprise to us here. But at the same time, I'm just pointing out things that they could have done to make things better. I personally think it's too late now. There's no way in hell they're ever going to catch up with those numbers unless something incredible happens.
I mean, I don't care if they catch up with the numbers. I'm like, at the end of the day, I'm still having more fun on this console than the PlayStation 4. And you know me, you said you're an Xbox guy. I have no affiliation to either one. I have both systems. I think the only thing I don't have is the Wii U. Even with the handhelds, I have everything.
Yeah.
But, my general interest stays with the Xbox. I have Witcher on the PS4. I was really enjoying it. And I think when we jumped back onto Destiny, which I did neglect last week, I just found myself gravitating more to the Microsoft system again. And I feel bad because the PS4 is just sitting there collecting dust, and it's the PS3 all over again with me. Not saying that it's a bad system at all.
And it's not. I have nothing against it. I know a lot of people get mad at one system or the other. I like the PS4. I think it's great. It just doesn't suit into what I'm doing. For example, I have 70 games, not counting demos or shit they gave us free or things. I have 70 games on this. That's ridiculous.
Right.
I haven't launched, you know, I haven't even launched a quarter of those games. A lot of the time I'll see them and I'll think I may want this and I'll get it. And I'm sort of slowing down on that. But I mean, I have too many games to play to justifiably go and grab another console to have even more games that I'm not going to play until something that I must play comes out. I have nothing against the PS4. It's just not the direction of the gameplay. All of us have always played on Xbox together. So I wanted to stay with the same community. But the PS4, there's not really like anything wrong. I mean, I'm glad that they definitely came out on top here, and Microsoft should learn not to fuck up so much.
But I mean, we've always said that the PlayStation 4, at least from my experience, is more of a single player thing to head towards, whereas Microsoft is more of a community base. That's why I buy games like The Witcher, and I got Batman on the PlayStation 4, and anything else, like I'm going to get the WWE. Destiny, all the other games that I played out of multiplayer, I get them on the Xbox. It's well, like I'm looking at like Dragon Age, which again, like you said, you play a lot of games. Dragon Age, I don't think I've even broken past the majority of the intro. I've played the game maybe about a total of 10 hours, and I'm still in the early stages of the game. We both said we have Metal Gear. I think I have the other one that you probably didn't even pick up yet, and that's still just sitting upstairs in the plastic, and I've had it for 2 weeks now.
Yeah. Yeah, you see what I mean? It's like there's a lot of games, so it's not that I don't, you know, I always wind up every generation with all the consoles, but this is just one of those generations where it's like we're doing so much. A lot of it goes into the stuff we're doing here because we have to actually watch the wrestling to review it, unlike the regular commenting people on the boards, you know, so it's like that's very time consuming also. And I'm just not really feeling it, aside from the few games we really devote ourselves to, like Destiny. And for me with Destiny, it's not that I don't like my single player games, but it's just that here we have the most popular game in the world right now, arguably the most popular game in the world. Everyone's competing online either as teams or just to be stronger overall. And to me, those leaderboards and those rankings and those stats matter more to me than when I succeed in a single player game by myself. Like the other day I played Shadow of Mordor. I picked up the Game of the Year edition. Never played that before. I just said, well, whatever, let me just grab the Shadow of Mordor. And, you know, I tried it and I had a lot of fun. I wish I would have gotten into it sooner. There's a lot of cool stuff. You could do whatever you want in this game. I wasn't even following any story. I was just wandering the world, killing orcs, doing stealth stuff. It was a blast, to be honest. But at the end of the day, it's not as rewarding for me personally as a multiplayer gamer than something that's basically a digital world where we are all competing. Who is the strongest? Who's the better at this? Where there's more recognition as far as being gamers and being able to praise each other and watch each other level up and grow and get skill. than there is for me in the multiplayer communities than there would be like in just stuff that we do solo. So I don't really engage in that much as much anymore. So there's nothing on the PS4 that I would really care for. But that being said, it's a cool system. The one game that caught my attention recently was that horror game I saw. I keep seeing on Twitch people playing this horror game.
Was it Till Dawn or Dawn something?
Yeah, something with Dawn in it.
I wanted to pick that up. The only reason I didn't pick that up on launch is you want to hear this one?
Okay.
The stupid setup with the PS4.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And like I said, I have no affiliation to any system, so don't take it as like I'm bashing the system and I'm a Microsoft fanboy. With the Xbox One, I got the system at launch. So as days and days went by, a week or weeks went by, I was running out of space. I came over to your house. We talked. I saw what hard drives you had. I went to the local shop, found a 2 terabyte hard drive, came home, plugged it into the Xbox. Problem solved. I don't think I'm ever going to run out of space on the Xbox. PS4, I can't do that. I got to go get a special hard drive with special tools to open up the PS4, which then voids my warranty. So it's like if I bought a 2-year warranty, it's like fuck that 2-year warranty if I want to upgrade my memory. And that is another reason why I have not been playing the PS4, because the single player games that I do buy, like Witcher and Batman, they take up massive space on the system. So it's like now I'm out of space and I don't want to go through the hassle of uninstalling certain things just to play a game to have to reinstall it again when I'm ready to play it.
Yeah, that's a pain in the ass. You saw what I did. You've been here before. I have the 2 gigabyte hard drives, multiple ones plugged into my Xbox One. Everything goes in there. And it's great. I just leave the internal hard drive completely empty. But, you know, it's just one of those things where, again, Sony has the better hand. They're going to win this generation. I have nothing against either side. I'm going to stick with Xbox because the amount of spare time I have, or the amount of spare time I choose to have, because I hate when people say, I don't have time for this, or I wish I could do this, but I don't have time. Like, we have time for everything, technically. It's ultimately what we choose to invest our time into. So I'm going to say I'm choosing not to really invest my time as much into gaming, because I'm really getting excited about the projects we're working on with the show, with the other podcasts, and just other things. Life, having, you know, girlfriends and other shit going on, just overall. I'm not going to play 80 hours worth of games. So I don't I don't need 2 consoles. As it is, I still have games on my phone I don't touch, and it's not like we have crap phones.
Same here. Like, we both jumped into Fallout. I haven't touched that in about almost 3 weeks now. My phone keeps updating me to tell me Fallout is a rarely played game. Hearthstone is a rarely played game.
Yeah, I saw you gave the PewDiePie game a 5-star review, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I didn't even know it existed, and I just suddenly came across your review with 5 stars, and it was like, whoa, PewDiePie has a game, and McWrestling loves it.
Yeah, I just actually finished it last night, as a matter of fact. It's a side-scroller type game, kind of like Mario, but it has like its little indie like pokes here and there in it, so they take jabs at other games. I like it. The music reminds me of Scott Pilgrim.
That's awesome. I'm gonna check it out. I'll probably pick it up for the phone.
Yeah,
you know, here we are talking about having too many games, and I'm talking about buying another game more. I'm probably not gonna play. No, that's my view, because I know there's always been some sort of unclear perspective as far as how I feel about the gaming console wars and everything. I think everyone play what you want. We play on all kinds of stuff. There's no discrimination. I troll a little and joke around and tease the other rivaling communities, but ultimately I don't give a fuck. It's all corporations. None of that money goes into our pocket. And yeah, yep. Sony kicked Microsoft's ass justifiably. They made too many mistakes in a row. Just like in the real world of gaming, ironically, that's like a contradiction there, but the real world of gaming, if we make a mistake, we pay for it, and then we have to try again. Well, try again, Microsoft. You made a lot of mistakes, and I still see mistakes. It's not like everyone says, well, they cleaned up their act. I really disagree. It's like when you come across a comic book of someone like Harley Quinn, quote-unquote, cleaning up her act, and you're thinking it's only a matter of time until she goes bonkers again. That's sort of how I see the Microsoft act right now.
Pretty much. That's how the new Batman book is going.
Yeah, because the dashboard's not really doing anything. It has a lot of bugs. I like it, and I complain about it a lot because it does a lot of really annoying things. And then my girlfriend says, well, you know, you didn't have to be in the beta dashboard. They warned you that there were going to be problems. And then I said, that may be well and true, but at the same time, I kind of desperately jumped from one shitty dashboard to another shitty dashboard in hopes that maybe there was less shittiness over here. And now I'm being penalized because I was warned this time. But ultimately, it's buggy. You've seen it.
Yeah, it's like I said, I missed the old dashboard. And I know being in the beta program, we do have the option to jump back into the old dashboard. But what happens when they give you that update that you can't like opt out of and you have to jump to this new thing? Like, I hope everything is fixed by then. Like, I don't like how now when I say Xbox, go home, like all the options that were on the old dashboard is gone and I can't do certain things that I was doing before.
Yeah, things that are now on the double tap of the guide on the left are no longer snaps on the right, so you can't voice command them anymore. I know exactly what you mean. It's not a major deal, but then there's bigger problems, like you can't unsnap Skype anymore and keep talking to someone. The moment it unsnaps, it hangs up.
Yeah, I remember we were having that issue last week.
Yeah, the things like that. Certain programs just throw you out, and I found tricks around certain things, but they need to fix it. It's much faster. To give it its credit, everything it does do, the vision they have for it, even the Cortana, I unlocked the hidden Cortana program that's in there.
I didn't even know there was a hidden Cortana.
If you go to settings, there's an invisible option to select it. You press A on twice, and it gives you Cortana, the actual voice of Jen Taylor, and you can command her. We say, Cortana, what's the weather? And she'll actually, on the side, snap the website of the weather, and it'll have the temperature and stuff. Or if you ask her, just one the other day, I asked her, who's the WWE champion? And she brought up Bing on the Internet Explorer, or not the Internet Explorer, whatever it's called now. It has a different name.
That's cool.
But, you know, yeah. So I brought up the Cortana. She's a little buggy, but I see what they're going for, but they need to fix that shit now. We're 2 years into the cycle. Don't keep being late for things. I appreciate everything. I still enjoy the council. You see me on it regularly, but they need to get their shit together. It's almost like when we watch wrestling and there are certain things we enjoy, but a lot of the time we'll look at other things and be like, what the hell was that? That's sort of how my entire attitude has been towards the Xbox One. And, you know, before we jump off of the console wars, also my perspective on PC, just to clarify a few things, because, you know, I always make the PC jokes and stuff. I have nothing against the PC community or the gamers. I actually think it's great. If you're one of those people that you get a thrill, almost like a race car driver where you got to change your parts and your stuff, it's an expensive, way more expensive to me than what it's worth to spend money on games. I'd rather spend it on other things. But if you're, that's your thing and it's your baby and you want to keep doing it, I've been there before. I started as a PC gamer and I can get that rush and that coolness about it. And the graphics really can be amazing in a lot of cases, especially when it comes to, you know, green stuff like, weed. No, I'm kidding. Not weed. When it comes to like trees and bushes and grass and stuff of that nature, you know, when you see those kind of things, it just really, it looks good on PC. But my problem is that a lot of the time you'll find PC people that are just putting over how good it is, if you will, versus console. I feel like that is true, but not for everyone. If you're a PC gamer out there and you're upgrading your rig constantly, all of the sliders on your games are on ultra and have every visual option checked, and it is a mind-blowing experience, then kudos to you, sir. You're more devoted to gaming than I am. You're having a better experience, and if it's worth that much to you, bravo.
I don't think it's about being dedicated to gaming. I think it's more of like, let me flash my big cock, because nobody gives a fuck at the end of the day.
But my issue is this. If you're a PC gamer, though, and you're moving even one slider down, even one slider down to medium or turning off one thing, any compromise, by default, you are not having a better experience than next gen games. There's just none. There's no disputing that the Xbox One and the PS4 are giving us the better experience. If you're in there praising the graphics of PC, but some of your sliders are in the middle, and I know you'll never admit it, that's why a lot of you guys don't upload videos. You don't like to show your specs, because then we'll see how shitty the stuff runs. But at the end of the day, that's what I'm talking about. Be a PC gamer, but if you're a PC gamer, be badass about it. I don't want to hear these people that are like running shit, turning down resolutions and sliders on low and stuff, or even medium for that matter, telling me that that's a better experience. I see how some of the stuff runs and it's not. If you're rocking 30 frames per second and you're doing like a 480 resolution or anything, no, I don't think so. And that's my issue. It's not with PC gaming as a whole. There are people out there with some badass rigs and I respect them. And when I look on YouTube, they're posting 1080p videos with 60 frames per second and you're watching the game and it's like, this is astounding to look at. But then there are people who silently put PC over, but you'll never see them upload a video because it'll be like them admitting that the shit just doesn't look as good. It's more like it becomes, there's a difference because PC can be the cheapest or the most expensive hobby ever. There are budget PC gamers where it's like, that's just about all that they're willing to spend. But because a lot of things on PC are free, there's a lot more mods and you're able to pirate a hell of a lot easier. It's the cheaper choice, especially if you could get like a middle of the line rig and run everything. Aight. Not necessarily great, but aight. If you're willing to settle for aight along with like all of the free mods and shit, then that's cool. That's for you. But I just, that's not a better experience than console gaming currently. You're fooling yourself. Top of the line PC gaming, that's a completely different world. There's a large, large world out there when you're discussing PC gaming. It's too small of a term to use when we're discussing something that has so many different tiers. And it's the top tier PC gamers that I respect. The ones that have their videos out there that will show you their stuff and how it runs and how gorgeous it looks. If you're not doing that, I don't give a shit about your PC opinion.
I mean, you know me, I'm the worst person to have this discussion with, because I'll pick up my my DS and I'll play Chrono Trigger on that. I've played Dear God games with like pretty crappy graphics, and I've enjoyed the experience, for especially games like Chrono Trigger, just because I enjoy the storyline. So I could care less about the graphics. That's just me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's middle of the line. I don't really care either way. I like good graphics, but I don't need great graphics. But I don't want to hear about great graphics without seeing them. Show me how great your stuff runs.
Right.
Put up or shut up. You want some? Come get some. Just bring it.
We're looking at you, Batman, for PC.
Oh, man. So, yeah, crazy, crazy stuff going on. We look at this. We're 30 minutes into the pre-show and we haven't touched
Walking Dead
yet at all. And I'm still not ready to touch it yet. There's the crazy part.
Yeah, this is going
to
be like our longest pre-show.
Yeah, whatever. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. One last thing I wanted to talk about before we went into Walking Dead. I'm sure you've all seen the commercials. You've seen them too. I decided to watch that movie San Andreas with The Rock.
Why?
Have you seen it yet?
No.
Yeah, I was sitting here one day. I was just feeling like a little silly.
So I don't think you're feeling silly. You got fucking bear goggles because you watch Ballers, and Ballers was a great show. And you're like, okay, I'm gonna give him credit.
No, it wasn't even that. It was my girlfriend who just said, she said, let's watch it. And I said, you seriously? You want to watch it? I was like, you're right. I'm serious now. We're gonna press A. We're gonna watch this. And we hit it, launched it, and it was like, all right, we're watching San Andreas. This is happening. And we sat there and watched it. And I gotta say, man, this is gonna be another role that The Rock is actually good at. When you watch this movie, the guy does it. And you've seen this movie before. You've seen this movie before, believe me. But everything in the movie that you've seen before has been done probably the best here. It's the cliche story where he's a, you know, like a rescue guy. Like by helicopter and stuff, he rescues stranded people, like in floods and stranded on cliffs and stuff.
Dude, the whole storyline looked very similar to something that came out a couple, like maybe 5 years ago, which is why I had no interest in watching it.
But it's done well. And also it's the same thing. He's divorced from his wife, who he has a daughter with, and there's a new father in the picture. And he's also regretting the loss of his other daughter. You see him looking at pictures where there's a second daughter, but we don't know why. And by this point, I already figured out she must have died in some sort of a horrible accident, and he feels guilty about it. And it's not that him and his ex don't love each other anymore, but it's just that that loss damaged the relationship. So ultimately now they had to separate from each other.
I feel
and
guilty at some that point, you mentioned this.
And at some point
some
in the
news
movie
that we have later on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We'll get into that. But yeah, at some point in the middle, there's that bonding and everything. It's everything you would expect, but the special effects are really dope, and it is done well. It's not like anything's done bad. It would be hypocritical of us to say, I've seen this before, and we're here watching wrestling and playing like GTA 5 and Year 2 of Destiny. We've done all of these things before. Sometimes you improve them, then it gets better. And it's just a,
this is why we picked up Grand Theft Auto for the Xbox One, even though we had it on 360.
Yeah, it's a Hollywood movie. Obviously, you're going to see a lot of stuff coming, but it's a done well Hollywood movie. You will enjoy it as long as you don't go in there too seriously. So I just wanted to throw that out there. All right. What do we have going on next? I guess now we can get into The Walking Dead, right?
Yeah, I was about to say, you pitched that movie very well, but I'm still probably not going to watch it.
Yeah, thanks for helping me put my stuff over, bastard.
No, it's funny because you mentioned it, and I thought back to, like you said, like Stasis picked it out. And I remember my wife is no longer allowed to pick out what movies we watch, by the way. Because
what happened? What was the movie? I have to hear it.
Chernobyl Diaries.
What the fuck is that? I've never even heard of that.
Right. So this movie comes out. I think there was maybe like two commercials on TV for it. And she was like, I want to see this. And she never says she wants to see a movie. So it's like, okay, like we're going to go see this, because you never want to go see a movie unless it's like Avengers comes out and both of us look at each other and we're like, we got to go see this. So when Batman, Superman comes out, we're like, we got to go see this. So this movie, Chernobyl Diaries, airs on TV, and it's like a horror movie. That's what it looks like in the commercial. So not knowing anything about it, I'm like, all right, we're going to go. Let's watch this movie. She's like, she wants to see it because it takes place in Russia. So I'm like, okay. The synopsis of the movie is pretty much this couple take two of their friends and they go to Russia where the brother lives, and he's supposed to be like their tour guide of Russia.
Okay.
But they don't want to just see the regular sights that you see. That's like, we come here, like say we didn't live in the US and we're like, hey, let's go to New York and let's go see the Statue of Liberty and let's go to Times Square. They don't want to see that boring stuff. They want to go into like the deep seedy parts. So they go to fucking Chernobyl, the abandoned city that got hit with the nuclear bomb. So they get there and it's like they drive in. The military tells them like they can't go in there because apparently the brother has like a connection, and they're like, yo, you can't come in here today. So they're like, ah, the trip's ruined. So they're driving on the road. And the driver, who's a friend of the brother, pretty much takes them down the back road and they find another way in. They go in and the radiation is so strong in the place that it fries their engine. The big plot hole here now is like, hey, so we're trapped here. Let's go see if we can find a car with another engine and replace the battery. But it's like, if your car just drove there and it sat there for about, 10, 20 minutes and your battery's been destroyed, I don't know how you figured you're going to find a battery that's probably been sitting there for years that would work on your car. So they're walking around the place, and at one point they go into like this abandoned building. For whatever reason, a bear runs through the building. It escapes. Like, they don't have to fight the bear or anything. It just like runs through the building.
You're not going to tell me this whole movie, are you? I'm already not enjoying it.
Yeah, like I said, it was a shit movie. Pretty much the movie goes on. They're all getting killed like one by one. Like, something's happening. They're getting kidnapped or whatever.
Don't spoil it. There might be someone who wants to go see this movie.
Nobody wants to see this movie. At the end of the movie...
spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, because somebody's going to go watch this shit. At the end of the movie, pretty much everyone's dead. It's only like two people left, a guy and a girl. The radiation's getting to them, so like they're slowly starting to go blind and whatnot.
Is there an M. Night Shyamalan twist? Is it demons or something?
It's not even demons. It's people that have been living there the whole time. Like, people that they stayed there for the bombing and they just lived there. So the government has been coming in and just locking them into this place, like in this room, like in the bottom. So the guy and the girl escape, and then the government comes and they're just like, stop, stop. But they're saying it in Russian, and the guy's blind. So he's running towards them and they're telling him stop in Russian. He doesn't understand him. So they gun him down. They take the girl, and the girl, she thinks that they're taking her to the hospital to treat her. The movie ends with them just taking her back inside the building, and they throw her in the room with the people and they close the door on her.
And what the hell made you guys watch this movie? How do you even find out about this?
Exactly. Like I said, it was like two commercials on TV. She said it looked interesting and we went to go watch it.
Like, you went like to a theater?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, this was in a theater. This wasn't like Netflix and chill.
Nah.
Holy shit. I'm sorry, man. I went to see Shazam when I was with a girl once. Is it Shazam? Or Kazam? Is it Kazam, the one with Shaquille O'Neal?
I think it was Shazam.
No, it must have been Kazam, because Shazam's a licensed
Shazam's already
Disney.
A Marvel character.
Yeah, so it must have been Kazam. But anyway, I went with a girl to see that just to get laid, and it was like such a bad movie. Mm. Yeah. Let's stop talking about bad stuff. We're going to scare people away. Bad enough we have to talk about TNA later on. Let's get into this Walking Dead. All right, so this episode transitioned a lot back and forth between the past and how everyone came to where they are now and the present. And it did this by showing the past scenes in black and white and the present scenes in color, obviously, Wizard of Oz style.
Yeah, I know a lot of people hated that black and white thing. I liked it.
It, to me, reminded me of the comic book, since the comic books are
exactly
black and white, like,
that's
manga.
What I like. And the comic book literally sits right on the side of my bed, so yeah. I liked it.
I could feel like the aura of the comic book. But anyway, yeah. we're gonna dissect this scene by scene, because there's really no other way. There was so much going on in this.
Right.
All right. So it opens with a gunshot, basically from the end of the season finale, with Rick shooting Pete's face off.
Yeah. Fuck Pete.
Right. So then we get to an area where there are trucks that are barricading. We don't really know much about it yet. It looks like there are trucks barricading a cliff.
Right.
And their walkers ultimately wind up pushing the truck off of the cliff. And we see some of the team firing flares into the air. And it's strange, because this was intentionally shot to give you confusion. I felt a little disconnected from the plot at this point, since I had no idea what was going on.
Right. Because it's like, now it doesn't even look like it's following the book.
Exactly, but it all comes together very well, because the following scene is Deanna on the ground in shock after she loses Reg, her husband, Mm-hmm. And Father Gabriel comes and finds her sitting on the ground, and she tells Father Gabriel that he was wrong, which is referencing the fact that he came to her like a little bitch, saying that everyone in Rick's camp was untrustworthy and unable to sustain themselves in civilized manners, and you have to get rid of them and things of that nature. Really horrible stuff.
Right.
And in the meantime, we have Abraham, who's pouring a little out for our homie, Mr. Monroe. Good old Reg, who died. He pours some liquor on the ground. He's getting wasted next to the wedding band. I feel that the wedding band might partially have been just something that hit him in a deep emotional way, considering
because of his family.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that sort of fucked him up a little bit. You know, there's a lot of things. Everyone has their thing that messes with them. And I think this was Abraham's. Sasha sees.
Not to segue off the show. You do realize that he was on Ballers also, right?
Yes, I do. I know.
Okay.
So Sasha sees him shit-faced, and he gives her, like, the peace sign, and she nods in acknowledgement. We wind up seeing that Tara's recovering, and Tara has a funny line where she tells Eugene that she says, thank God nothing happened to your hair. Good dynamic between those two characters. I like their relationship. A lot of fun stuff going on so far.
Yeah.
We go to a scene of Carl on the roof with Enid, and in the background, I think that was the other boy, jealous in the distance. I
totally missed that scene because the whole time I was sitting here complaining, I was like, I didn't see Carl at all in the episode.
Yeah, he was with Enid and there was another boy in the distance watching them, sort of looking like they were foreshadowing the other boy being jealous of Carl and Enid's relationship. Then we go to a scene with Rick, Daryl, and Morgan, where Rick basically explains to Morgan that he doesn't take chances anymore, essentially meaning that he's a stranger here and that for the time being, they're going to lock him up. So after that, we flash back to the present. And Rick and Daryl are there, and Rick wants to tell Deanna that Daryl shouldn't be looking for any more people, and they have that discussion, which Daryl is clearly uncomfortable about, and he doesn't fully agree with Rick's perspective on that. So then we go to a scene of Sasha and Abraham, who are in a car, and they stop in front of some red balloons, which appear to be some sort of a marking post. And we
my whole question with that was, where were they getting helium to fill these balloons?
Well, they actually explained this on The Talking Dead, but helium is actually basically a gas that doesn't expire or go anywhere. It's there forever. Okay. So you can get it. That's like an easy supply of helium to get. So we flash back to the black and white, and Rick is walking in on Morgan training with his staff. And Rick asks him, where did he learn that, before or after the zombie apocalypse? And Morgan says, it happened afterwards. And then they do sort of a throwback to the comic book arc that's coming up, because it looks like they're doing the No Way Out arc from the comic book. But Morgan says, sometimes you're safer when there's no way out. And when I heard that line, I just remember thinking, all right, well, now I know that no matter what happens, they're fucked. They just used the name of the arc from the comic book where all of the walkers come, the super herd, as they call it in the comic books, come and destroy everything, which I've read. It's an awesome arc. Personally, I felt that they should have waited for this arc. I wanted like a season of filler. I know that sounds crazy, but I think we needed a season of filler where you get to know these people in Alexandria a little bit, maybe have some other threat, a smaller threat come. That way, when this walker herd does come, because if it's anything like in the comic books, it's catastrophic. There's a lot of shitty things that happen. But that way, when it happens.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was telling a lot of people that, because they know, like, I read the book, so I kind of have somewhat of a foreshadowing of what's going to happen. I was telling them that this season was probably going to be the boring season where you're going to just see them living life as normal as they can within the town of Alexandria. But it looks like I was wrong.
Yeah, I didn't want a boring season, but I just wanted a season of another threat that they make it through together to keep the characters that we're inevitably going to lose a little bit more established so that when it does happen, it hits harder. But it looks like we're sort of rushing it and we're getting the super herd now. Which I guess is fine because, again, it's an awesome story. May as well strike while the iron's hot. There's so much action and so much crazy shit that happens, and it looks like we're getting it. So, yeah, once we heard Morgan say sometimes you're safer when there's quote-unquote no way out, the name of the arc, that's when we knew we were going to get it. Mm. So after that, we go back to a present scene of Eugene at the gate. And it's basically introducing Heath from the comic books, who, how the hell did they do that? It looks like Heath straight out of the comic books.
Like, they ripped him right out. Like, remember literally. That game Comic Zone for the Genesis?
Of course.
Yeah, it's like they ripped him out. Instead of jumping into the comic, they ripped him out of the comic and put him on screen.
What a good Heath, right? It really felt like the comic book. The more I saw the interaction and stuff, I was getting thrills at this. It was like, holy shit, look at these characters that we know and how they're interacting well. And it was cool because he didn't want to let Heath in. And, you know, Eugene's asking in his typical way, are you going to kill me? And he says, I'm not going to kill you, but the longer you make me wait, the more tempted I'll be to whip your ass. And then Eugene lets him in. And he also meets Scott and Annie while they're out there at the gate. Really good scene. I like the way they
tell them the line about the hair. He was like, I like the hair choice.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I'm like this someone like me with a good hair choice and stuff. It was awesome, man. Really cool. This was such a well done episode.
Yeah.
Then we have a scene of Rick and Morgan walking along the wall, and Rick's giving Morgan the backstory of these people, just how they learned how to live, but not really how to survive, and how it might be too late to change them.
Right.
And is where he comes across Father Gabriel and Carter, I believe, was the other guy, right? Digging graves.
The carpenter guy that said that they pretty much told him like he's going to set up the, he said he was setting up walls and whatnot. Yeah,
right, that's Carter. Right. And then Rick objects to them burying a killer in the walls, meaning Pete. And they object and say it's not his choice. But ultimately, Deanna comes out and she backs Rick and says for him to take his ass out of here. And in the meantime, Pete's teenage son, Ron, I believe his name was, overhears the entire conversation. It just shows him stalking in the background. So we get a present day scene now where it's Rick, Michonne, and Morgan checking part of the barricade. And Morgan has a comedic scene here where he says, back when you were in my place where I lived, did you take one of my protein bars?
the peanut butter protein. He's like, I knew I had one peanut butter left.
Yeah, Morgan and Michonne are a couple in the comic books. So it's
cool. It's funny because like when that scene happened, like for those people, for those of you that don't read the actual book, spoiler alert, Michonne is kind of a slut in the book.
Yeah, she is. We won't go too far into it. We're just going to say that and leave it at that. But
yeah,
I did like seeing that relationship that the two of them have there.
I want to see if it's going to go further on the show.
Yeah. And I like her answer where she said, that's how it is. You always think there's one more peanut butter bar. it blew my mind, honestly, this season, how much I felt like I was reading the comics, though, the way people are with each other and stuff. It really felt like they're doing The Walking Dead, you know, not that this series has ever been bad, but this episode.
You appreciate
really,
it more because you just sat through Fear the Walking Dead.
I don't think it's that. That's harsh of you, but I'm just thinking this is really feeling like the comic
now
book
go,
now.
Oh, that's harsh, but we were bashing that shit every week until that season finale.
Yeah, I guess we were. But the season finale was good. We'll give it another chance. And I didn't watch any of that. Yeah. I only watched the first episode of that Fear the Walking Dead Flight 180, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know about that.
I do.
Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know, in between commercial breaks of both The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead from now on, there's going to be a short 60-second clip of a Fear the Walking Dead spinoff of people on an airplane and someone's infected on there. And it's going to go on throughout this entire Walking Dead season into Fear the Walking Dead. And eventually that person's going to wind up, one of the survivors will wind up on the Fear the Walking Dead show. And if you don't want to see it during the commercial breaks, you can always just subscribe to AMC's YouTube and they post all of the videos of that up there.
Totally random. You know that there's this one female walker that they use. Did you spot her in the intro of the season premiere?
No, I did not. What about her?
I was staring at her and I was just like, when the walkers were breaking through and I was watching and I was like, that walker looks familiar. And my wife goes, yeah, that's that one walker that they use every season. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
They have quite a few multiple walkers that they use every season. They talk about that also on The Talking Dead afterwards.
Okay, I definitely got to watch Talking Dead. Like, I always start off watching it, and by like the third week, I just stop watching it.
Yeah, I love
unless
watching
they have
it because,
somebody like CM Punk that goes on there.
Yeah, I love watching it because I love seeing how they do all of the effects and the different ways they make different zombies and stuff. But the one that tore through where he squeezed through the trucks and he got all torn up on the way, that's the same one that killed Dale a few seasons ago. So that's how much they use the same walkers over and over again. Yeah, it's really cool. I like the way the entire production process goes. So back to the past, we have Rick and Morgan dropping off Pete's body. And Rick suggests to leave him there, but Morgan says that that's not who Rick is and that he knows that's not who Rick is. And then Rick assures Morgan that he doesn't know who he is. And then Rick hears something while Morgan's digging the hole, and he walks to the cliffside to find that there's a mech. That's where the super horde is, basically. They're all in that little funnel there.
Yeah.
And then Ron, once again, is caught running from walkers, and he almost runs off of the cliff. but Morgan tackles him just in time, and the walkers that are tailing him ultimately wind up going over instead. And just to clarify, because they weren't being clear about what this was that we're looking at, but now it's revealed to us that this is a quarry that all of the walkers just happened to pile into. This wasn't set up in any way. It's just a coincidental lucky thing.
One of them, it was like not one, but probably a group of them first got there and they kept making noise, which attracted more and more and more. And it just kept, it became this whole, I wouldn't even say community, because it's like a whole state full of them.
Yeah, exactly. So back to the present, we have Daryl on a bike leading a herd of walkers. And we're not sure as to why yet, but they just give us that quick shot, really cool shot of Daryl. And we jump immediately back to the past, and Ron wants to know where his dad was buried by Rick and Morgan. And Rick starts to realize that this giant pit is ultimately the reason why Alexandria has been able to sustain itself. Why this community has been able to live. That's been what their savior's been. Not just luck that they've lived out here completely defenseless and
it's
silly.
Blocking people from coming to them, pretty much.
And most of the walkers are routed by the trucks, and it makes them fall into that quarry pit. So Morgan notices that occasionally a few of them are slipping through, and Rick warns Ron of how dangerous it is out here and how bad his death will be. He goes into detail about what it'll be like when he dies. He goes into Rickmore, and he's like, you know, it won't be a slow death. And he really
you become one of those, and then you're there forever.
Yeah, he gets all nasty and stuff. And they start their path back, and in the meantime, we get a jump back to the present, where we have Glenn, Heath, and Nicholas going into a building. And Glenn explains to him that the process here they're going to use is to open the door and let two out at a time. And if more come out, you supposedly take them on. And Heath is skeptical, and he's a little bit scared about this idea, but Nicholas reassures him that Glenn knows what he's doing there, and that originally he and Aiden did not. We cut away from them, and we get a montage of scenes, because Glenn's trying to pry open the door, Abraham and Sasha and Daryl are all leading the herd of walkers away, and then it jumps back to the past, and we're at a big house meeting, I'm assuming at Deanna's house, where we're hearing Rick's plan that we're watching for the first time, of how the walkers are already slipping through the trucks, and eventually the truck's going to go off of the cliff, and what was this dude's name again? Carter. Carter suggests reinforcing the area, but Rick explains that the sound of them is just drawing more near. So even if they just decided not to kill them or draw them away and just reinforce the area, it would just be too much eventually, and it would give.
At some point, like, you have to face the fact that these things are going to get through.
Yeah, pretty much. So then we have Sasha and Abraham and Daryl, who were assigned to lead them away. Rosita, Spencer, and Holly were assigned to keep watch. And Michonne and Glenn volunteered to go with Rick. And Glenn advises Maggie to keep an eye on Deanna, because he feels that the morale of the people is going to be dropped if they don't have her as the leader, since they know her the best. And then he also explains, he doesn't say what, but he says that's not the only reason. And Father Gabriel volunteers comedically, but they immediately turn his ass down. They're just like, no, not bringing you, you suck.
Like, what are you going to do? You don't even like to kill these things.
Yeah, and in the midst of the meeting, Carter calls Rick on his psychotic ways, and how are we going to listen to this guy that shoots people's faces off and waves a gun around in the street like a psycho, and Deanna shuts him up. It's funny how much Deanna's team Rick now, which I like, because I really like Deanna and Rick on the same page. I always have. She's one of my favorite characters. In the comic books, she was gender swapped because she's originally Douglas Monroe.
Right.
Which we
talked about on the second serving.
Yeah. So Deanna, I like her a lot better than the Douglas counterpart from the comic book. She's definitely more of a personality, and the actress plays her perfectly. It's awesome.
It works for me, because before we had Herschel, and like, it's like, to have Douglas, I just like the whole gender swap thing, where it's like, now we have like a female counterpart to just stand there and shoot the shit with Rick. Well, not shoot the shit, but it's pretty much like advise him and let him know like what's going on and what he's dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. And lastly, Heath volunteers, and then Nicholas volunteers, despite Glenn giving him this look like, don't you dare fucking volunteer, you know. But Nicholas, I think at this point, I'm not sure 100%, but I think it's just a matter of guilt. He feels accountable, and maybe he wants to prove himself.
Yeah, that's what I gathered by the end of the episode, or even after the whole thing where it's Glenn, Heath, and him, and they're taking out the walkers once they're coming out of the little store.
Yeah. So back to the present, we have Rick, Morgan, and Michonne, who are sending off the flares, and Daryl's leading the walkers into them. and it does a quick flashback to the past where Rick maps out how he's going to be drawing them away. Quick flashback to the present. And as they're shooting off the flares, Michonne notices that some of those walkers are starting to hit the wall and starting to push it a little bit. And we start to see shots of them smashing themselves, getting crushed against the wall and stuff.
Yeah, I think like one of them falls down and like another one walks over it. And it's a like small attention to detail, but I was like, wow, they really went all out where it's like, I guess the front of one of the walker's boots or shoes hits the chin of the other one that fell down and you see like the skin rip off. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah, their attention to detail is amazing on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, back to the past, we see them building this wall. We see them doing the reinforcements, and Daryl explains to Rick that he's going to go out and find more people because that is in fact taking care of themselves. Because earlier on, Rick said we got to take care of ourselves. So Daryl's response now is this is us taking care of ourselves, getting more people in here, fortifying this.
Yeah, I didn't think about it in the scene, but it would make more sense. Rick himself said it, that these people have been sheltered all this time and it might be too late to even try and train them to defend themselves. So it would be the more logical way to look at things is to get people that are still out there, that they've seen what's out there, they've been fighting and they've survived so long, to bring them in and have them defend the community or take up the task of trying to train the people within the community to become better fighters and defenders.
Yeah, exactly. So then we also have Maggie still in the past scene, and she's telling Tara what a scumbag Nicholas is, because if you recall at the end of the last season, Nicholas tried to kill Glenn out in the woods, winds up catching a Glenn ass beating, almost eaten by walkers, and the two of them barely make it back to Alexandria. Nicholas is also the one responsible for Noah's death and the whole thing that happened in the revolving door. So she asked Tara what her course of action should be, and at this point, they're making it clear that Maggie and Tara are extremely close, so they're confiding in each other about the decision, and Tara ultimately says that she intends to follow Maggie's lead and keep the secret of what he did so that they don't throw him out, because this
So she got a sister to replace her sister.
Exactly, and that this is Glenn's way, basically, of dealing with it. He saves these people, so they decide ultimately to spare Nicholas.
And this sister doesn't just fucking sing at the, like, terribly at campfires and whatnot. It looks like she could defend herself.
Oh, you're not going to hate on Beth now, are you?
I've never liked her character.
She gets a cool sister, a lesbian sister. Yoelma Romero wouldn't approve of this.
Like, come on, gay Jesus.
Yeah, what are you doing? So we get back to the present, and Glenn and company shoot the glass open of the building they're in front of, and they start taking out the walkers, which leads to a flashback to the past where Morgan and Kara are interacting for the first time, and Morgan asks Kara if she was a cop too, just like Rick, because she's always watching and she always seems ready, and she still plays dumb and homely and stuff, but it's just giving us an idea of the fact that Morgan senses these things because he's such a badass.
Yeah, I like that, and I like how she didn't give him a direct answer either. Like, she never said yes or no to that.
Yes, he'll learn. You're going to learn today. Yeah. So back in the present, Abraham and Sasha are still in the car, and Abraham gets out to lure some of the straggling walkers away in a rather reckless process of just jumping out of the car and attacking walkers all over the side of the woods. And when he gets back in the car, Abraham recalls Pete's horrific death to Sasha, and he talks about how Rick shot Pete in the face and his face blew up like Pompeii, and he says he thinks that he got some of Pete's brains in his hair, and he starts laughing maniacally, and Sasha looks at him like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Is he going nuts? And then she asks him, she's like, what the hell are you doing? And he says that he's grabbing the bull by the nutsack.
I've always liked this character, always.
Yeah, he has such great one-liners. So then
he reminds me of Seamus with his hair dye, so yeah.
They have such good casting in the show. They look so much like the comic book people, right?
Yeah. Well, you see, in the comic books, I never knew what he actually looked like, because in the books that I have, it's black and white. So it's just like, oh, that's what he looks like when I finally saw him.
Well, no, the cover of the first issue they introduce him in is in color, and it's the same shot they use in the comic book of him, Rosita, and Eugene standing side by side.
I gotta go back and look at that, because I have, it's a collection of all the books I have. I don't have like just the single issues.
Yeah, yeah. They use that same iconic shot of the three of them when they first introduced them, which I thought was awesome.
Oh, okay. Because like the book I have, it's funny. It shows, it's like Rick and Andrea and the other guys, like they're on the cover on the top half. And then at the bottom half, it shows them all as zombies.
Yeah. So we go back to the past now, and they're reinforcing the wall, and Rick apologizes to Deanna about Reg, and he explains to her that at this point, the Alexandrians are going to have to learn how to defend themselves, all of them, and this is imperative. And as he's explaining this, there's a walker attack coming toward where they are, and he gives them a moment. He sort of takes a shot there where he tells them, you guys got to take care of this, and Carter and the rest of the rookies are shitting bricks, and eventually...
Hey, Carter's like, help me!
Yeah, and the veterans have to come and use their, you know, Morgan with his bow staff, Michonne with his sword. Everybody goes in and kicks ass, and the rookies are literally curled in a ball with, like, terrified looks in their faces after the encounter is over. We hear that Carter's planning to kill Rick in another scene. Eugene is in there getting supplies or something, and he overhears this little meeting that Carter's having with all of his people, stumbles and knocks something over, and they hear him in the other room, and Carter has a gun pointed to him. And he's about to kill Eugene because he heard the plan. And the worst possible thing that can happen to him happens because Rick walks in while you have a gun pointed at his friend.
Yeah.
And it's just this moment of, oh, shit. You know,
and Rick, like Rick isn't like, oh, shit. Like Rick just instantly goes, hey, like first mistake you made, you should have had a lookout.
Yeah. And that's the scary thing about Rick, that at this point, these are the kind of moments that Rick is alive for.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, this is an uncomfortable situation for everyone. It's like, nope, not Rick. That motherfucker's been waiting for someone to pull out a gun.
Pretty much, since he got here.
So he quickly disarms him, and he spares his life. He has the gun pointed to the back of his head, and Carter says, just kill me. The other ones had nothing to do with it. And, yeah, he doesn't kill him. He just spares his life, and that's it. And we get back to the present, and the whole leading walkers away thing is still happening, and Carter apologizes to Rick for everything and shakes his hand and says that he was wrong back there. And shortly after that, he winds up getting eaten. Like a walker literally bites his face off through the trees.
Bites his cheek.
The trees. Yeah, so he winds up getting his face bitten off.
And he starts screaming, which starts luring the walkers towards him the road.
Right, and then we flash back to the past where Morgan's on Rick's porch, and Morgan invites Rick. Rick invites Morgan to live in his home. Basically, because he came over and sat there because there's no porch where he is. And then Rick is ironically speaking about how he wanted to kill Carter, but it doesn't matter because that guy is going to die no matter what. And then we flash back to the present, and Carter's on the ground screaming after getting bit, causing more walkers to come. And Rick winds up having to stab him in the back of his head and kill him very morbidly in Rick style. It's funny how I love how conflicted of a character he is, you know?
Yeah. Like
everything came full circle there. Cause you know, Rick doesn't want to do that shit, but he is Rick.
Like, yeah, at the point, cause it was like, yo, this guy was an asshole. He tried to take out my people. He's been plotting against me. And it was like, I don't want to kill him because I understand we're strangers coming into his place and we're changing up their whole way of life. But like, you just got bit, man. And I've been doing this long enough to the point that I know, like, there ain't no patching up your face and bringing you back, hoping that like you'll survive. You're making this noise.
He would have let him pass away the way that
naturally.
Yeah, we've had a few characters that have passed away naturally. Bob passed away naturally.
Bob,
but it's because he wouldn't stop
Andrea.
Screaming. Yeah, no, Andrea got shot. Michonne shot her.
Well, no, Michonne shot her. What was it, after she turned, like when she faded, and then it looked like she was about to resurrect?
No, she shot her. She was very much still.
Was she?
And,
I gotta go back
sure,
and watch
for
that.
Sure, she just wanted to end it there. It's almost like the end of the Fear the Walking Dead season 6. She was sort of in that state. Like, yeah, she was bitten, but she would have been fine. We wind up back in the past, and Rick and Jesse are in the weapon room coming to get flares. And Jesse winds up warning Rick that he can't talk to Ron like that, you know, because of the thing that happened earlier where Ron nearly went off of the cliff. And she's explaining that it can't be come from Rick. And I guess she's trying to say that he has to understand you're the dude, no matter what, you're always going to be the dude who shot his dad, even if his dad was a bad person. She didn't say this, but it sort of writes itself where she's like, whatever advice you have, it can't come from you. Of all people, you can't be the one that gives this kid advice. He's always going to have that impression. He's probably going to rebelliously do the opposite of what Rick asked. I think that's what Jesse's smart enough to realize, that Ron is going to go against Rick. And Rick has good advice. So the last thing you want is for all of Rick's good advice to be ignored. So it's better not to come from him, I think, is what she was alluding to there.
Yeah, yeah.
And we wind up back in the past, and Rick is discussing the finish line of this entire plan of how far they're going to put the walkers out, which was about 20 miles. And Abraham asks Sasha if she's doing this because she wants to die. Obviously, she says no. And I think what they're saying basically here is Abraham went out there because he wants to die. He's reached a point now where he's reckless and he no longer wants to live. and he was just seeing if Sasha's on the same page with him. Because at this point, it becomes obvious that Abraham is suicidal. He was trying to get himself killed when he came out of the car. We see a scene where Glenn's talking to Nicholas about how he's not ready, but there's going to be some training. He alludes to where he says he's going to make sure that he is ready. He's going to make sure that he's ready to make it right. They're leading all of the walkers away. Everything's going according to plan. And then suddenly a fucking horn blows, of all things. A horn blows, changing the direction of the walkers.
I lost it when that happened. I started laughing so hard.
You laughed when that happened? I was pissed off.
I laughed because it was like, you guys went through all this shit. You just lost the guy. And the horn's coming from fucking Alexandra.
I couldn't believe it. When I heard it, I just wanted to... I was so into the episode that you know what my mentality was? My mentality was, even though this would be impractical in the narrative, I was thinking, hopefully that horn only lasts a few seconds and then we can fix everything.
Right.
Then when it didn't last a few seconds, my next impression was, hopefully that horn doesn't wind up making the entire horde leave. Hopefully there's just a few stragglers. And then when it pans up and you see the amount that go, you know that they're screwed, man.
Yeah,
you know that they're screwed. And I posted this on Twitter. This is Theon Greyjoy from Game of Thrones, but this was my exact reaction when I feel it, man, right when it happened.
I will kill that man. I don't care how many arrows they feather me with, how many spears they run through me. I will kill that horn-blowing cunt before I fall.
That's exactly how I felt, man. You horn-blowing cunt, whoever you are. Really, really crappy stuff. Really crappy stuff.
Who do you think's responsible for that?
Well, there are a few theories here of what's happening. There was a preview of the next episode which had Enid climbing into a car, an abandoned car. She closes the door behind her and she writes on the dust of the window, JSS, and then ducks down. She's leaving a signal for someone. I don't know what the hell that is.
Imagine, I feel like she's leaving it for the wolves. From the minute I've met her, when the minute we see her and you see like she was actually sneaking out of the town to go walk around the woods and do whatever the hell it is she's doing during the day, I figure she's a member of the wolves.
Imagine if what happened was she wandered off to leave a signal and then walkers found her. And what we're watching in this preview of the next episode is moments before the horn goes off. The car gets surrounded by walkers and she hits the fucking horn to signal people to help her, ultimately breaking their entire plan. It could be something like that. If she's not deliberately signaling the wolves, it could be that she's trying to honk a horn just to get the attention. Because I've seen a few shots of her inside of the car with blood on the outside of the car, almost like if someone got killed right on the outside of the car. Like maybe she didn't open the door for someone. Maybe walkers pressed against it. But she's the only one near a horn in the preview, man. I hate to say it, but Enid's dumbass might be the one who blew that horn.
I don't know. To me, it didn't sound like a regular car horn, though. It sounded louder.
It sounded like one of those big truck horns. So the other alternative, which is the closer and more obvious one, is that it's the wolves themselves. The wolves have taken Alexandria in the time when everyone was gone doing this mission. They took the remaining civilians that are there, and now they're blowing the horn and leading Rick and everyone back. And Rick's going to walk back into a trap where they have people at gunpoint or something of that nature, very possibly. But at the same time, there's also a preview of the next episode where Father Gabriel's in Alexandria and he comes up to Carl and he asks Carl for help. He says that back at the church, he wasn't ready before, but now he is. And then Carl pauses and contemplates that for a minute and he suggests that Father Gabriel tell everyone this. And then he also tells him to come back this evening and they'll start with the machete. So I guess they're going to start Father Gabriel training. So the only way that scene would make sense is if that happened before the horn goes off and Alexandria still hasn't been attacked. Because we know the horn went off at Alexandria, but in these upcoming scenes, everything looks calm there. So we're going to assume that maybe we're going to go back a little bit and see how the horn's being blown.
Yeah, say they're doing flashbacks again, but they're not using the black and white for the flashbacks.
Not necessarily a flashback, but they're just going to bring us into these scenes moments before so we'll understand. That's the only thing that makes sense because Alexandria looks fine in the preview. There's nothing going on there. So we'll see. But overall, really good episode. Very well narrated, very well written. I like the whole back and forth with the past and the incorporation of the comic book stuff, even the name No Way Out. This was an awesome, awesome thing, man. Very good season premiere.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I had fun with it, man. I had a lot of fun with this one. So, wow, look at that. We talked pop culture. We said we're pop culture as well as wrestling, right? Look at that. An hour and 11 minutes of pop culture. Hell yeah. All right. Well, that being said, I think it's time to start the show.
Let's do it.
This is the Talk Brunch Podcast, available at talkbrunch.com. Also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Talk Brunch, where the heels are all baby faces. And now introducing the two guys who run the whole thing, the tag team champions of the internet, and your hosts, Rick Dara and McWrestlin.
What's up, fellow marks? Welcome to episode 78. Here with me, as always, is McWrestlin, and we're ready to rock the wrestling world. And it has been another crazy yet entertaining week, with a lot to review and much to talk about. And I also have with me a payday bar, which I intend to eat right here on the show. WWE's been plugging them. Most foods and beverages WWE plugs are disgusting. But I was curious about the payday.
You thought this was the one that's going to break the mold?
Yeah, I wanted to share that experience with everyone. So we're going to eat the payday.
Dare I say, I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
We'll see. I'm going to judge this objectively. But we tried the McSausage McDonald's all-day breakfast thing recently because we were on The Rant. If any of you guys didn't listen to that episode, go back and listen to The Rant. And we were on there. And AA brought up this whole McSausage thing that's happening. I think it's called the McSausage. I don't know what the hell it's called. But they were talking about how great it is that McDonald's serves breakfast every day. I'm telling you this, and you were there on the show with me.
Yeah.
But they got me curious. You know, they got me genuinely curious about this all-day breakfast thing. And I don't normally eat McDonald's. You said you hadn't eaten McDonald's in 3 years.
Yeah. I actually went into at my day job, I went there and I looked at the McDonald's menu, and I was looking at all the stuff that they had from the new all day breakfast menu, and I just said nope and walked away.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I normally will have occasionally a McDonald's, like mainly the fish sandwich. Like, I don't know, as I've gotten older, I stay away. I haven't had like a Big Mac since I was a teenager or any of those crazy burgers, but I'll usually have like the fish fillet and some fries. That's about my full relationship with McDonald's at this point. I'm bored.
Yeah, I did when they were doing the first Angus burgers. That was literally the first burgers I've had from them.
Those were decent.
Yeah, but, like, I've never eaten a Big Mac in my life. When I was younger, all I would eat from there was just straight the nuggets and fries. That was it. And then, like, I took a break from it, and when I went back, it was still just the nuggets and fries, more so the Angus, and now it's just like, I'm completely done with it.
Yeah, well, AA on The Rant talked about these biscuits and shit in McDonald's, and I figured I wanted to do something for the station and give my experience eating this thing. And I ate it, and I have to say, Matt, like, it was really, really bad. Like, it was unusually bad. And keep this in mind, that we live in an area where there are a lot of breakfast choices. You can get like a really good fresh salted bagel with sausage and bacon and eggs that's done properly, like with all real ingredients. So we're used to
Yeah, you can get that from the local deli.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of these delis around here, we're New Yorkers, so a lot of these delis, they'll do whatever the hell you want. This breakfast all day to us exists everywhere. Like, I can ask for a sausage, bacon, egg, and cheese right now, and it's 2 a.m.
Dude, like, you know, no joke, like, in high school, that was my breakfast every day, because there was a deli right across the school, or right across the street from my high school, so I used to get that. And all throughout the day, I used to go, hey, that shit was so good, I'm going to go get one after school.
Yeah, so
and
since
I would go to the same spot and pick it up again.
Yeah, so since we live in this area, we're used to that. We're used to having this dynamic of being able to eat whatever the hell we want. But still, they were excited about this Mick breakfast shit. And, you know, we decided we were going to go with it. So my girlfriend and I, for some reason, she foolishly joined me on my venture and also had this as well.
Poor Stasis.
Yeah, and it was really nasty, man. Like, it was really nasty. I have a really iron cast stomach, so I just kind of felt that it was nasty. Nothing bad happened to me.
I knew what to expect, honestly. Like, I've never been a fan of McDonald's breakfast beyond the McGriddles.
Yeah, but
and even the McGriddles weren't that great. But like, I don't like their hot cakes. I don't like their eggs. I don't like the sausage. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Well, nothing bad happened to me except that I just felt like weird a little bit. Nothing like I felt sick, but yeah, the lady got sick. She got really sick. She didn't like it at all.
Wow.
She just felt disgusted by it. But I could tell, because when you eat it, the cheese doesn't even, like, what is that? Is that real cheese? Or do they put like a Post-it on there and fucking fry it? Because I mean, the cheese is gross. The whole thing is completely disgusting. Like, I can't believe that people look forward to that. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. It's really
dude, there's a McDonald's right by my house. So like, there's times where like I'll just go walk like down the block, and I've seen stuff like their orange juice comes in a plastic bag that looks like a catheter. I'm not kidding you. If you've never seen it, it's literally in a bag, and then they just like attach this hose on the bag, I guess, to the machine, and the machine pulls out the juice all day throughout the day. Their eggs aren't actual eggs. It's like some type of farm egg, some factory egg that's already made to look like a circle. That's why your eggs are always perfect when you get it from there.
Yeah. Though you see, it just wasn't good. I'll never do it again. It's horrible. That food is disgusting. There's no point in putting yourself through that. It'll kill you.
Go to IHOP. I went to IHOP today.
Breakfast, man. You can get a real breakfast without eating that nasty shit. That's just my plug. You know, I'm sorry. Sorry.
I mean, it's
sorry,
like if
double
you're not
a,
lazy,
sorry.
Do what I do. A lot of the time, like I have a waffle maker that can make waffles, make some eggs, bacon, sausage, make some pancakes. If I'm feeling lazy, like I just said, I'll get up and I'll go to IHOP. Like, do anything other than McDonald's for breakfast.
Yeah, if the rest of you rant guys are going to eat that shit, that's fine. It's almost like the PS4. It's just not for me. But I'm just not going to go there, man. Like, there's just no way that's ever happening again. You've been in the area where I am. You see how many options we have. There's no excuse whatsoever to ever go back there again.
It's the same here. I can go left and right. And even in the same spot where the McDonald's is, there's so much better places. There's at least three or four delis. Popeyes doesn't do breakfast, but there's a Popeyes up the block. I can go the opposite way. And while I would never eat Burger King's breakfast, Burger King has a breakfast menu also.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to do something to be a little bit more part of the station and stuff. And also, once again, guys, we're part of Rant EM now. Awesome station. We have 7 shows up there. Go check it out. We have Freaks and Geeks, really funny show, prank calls, all kinds of stuff. I laugh listening to it. We have What Are You Reading, which has the comic books. We're going to talk with these guys about comic books real soon because McWrestle and I are big comic book people. We have...
Like I just mentioned, I'm reading the new Batman with Gordon taking on the mantle.
Yeah, we have The Rant, which is the flagship show of Rant EM, hosted by AA and by TC3, Tony C. Really good show. We were on there last week. Who knows when we'll pop up there again. We have Phil Rea, Turnbuckle Throwbacks. He had a really cool show. He talked about some old school Nitro and his experience at Comic-Con, which was very interesting to hear his perspective on what he enjoyed about Comic-Con. We have the Wrestling Call-In Show, all kinds of jokes and antics going on there. It's just great, man. Just check some other stuff. They're also going to have exclusive Hell in the Cell coverage, which is going to be really cool. Very exciting. We have a lot going on. And again, who knows when McWrestle and I will pop up on one of those shows, or who knows when they'll pop up on our show. You know, the only way to find out is for all of you guys to stay tuning in.
Yeah, just keep on listening. Listen here, listen over there.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to ask you, because I didn't get a chance to see it yet, but I saw you talking to the other guys about it. How was that Sting preview that they did on the WWE Network?
It was very weird for me because, you know, like as much as we do the show and we know most of the things that go backstage, we got to see like Sting going to WWE and he's talked about the contract that he signed. Well, it wasn't an actual contract, but it was just to make appearances, and you just got like a whole behind the scenes look of when he sat down with Triple H, like the first time they met, him driving through his town. They talked about his career, the final days in WCW, and it's pretty cool, pretty cool.
All right. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it. And
it was something I wasn't even going to watch. And I was just like on the network, and I was like, rather than watching the normal things that I watch on the network, let me just check this out. And yeah. I enjoyed it.
And you guys mentioned that they used some fan footage or something, right?
Yeah. Cause they were showing Sting, like he's backstage at one point and he's talking about, he's nervous, but he's like, cause he doesn't know how the crowd's going to react. And when he goes out there and he heard the pop, and then they show like pretty much Sting, like they're leading him from his locker room, because they show him like putting on the paint by himself in his locker room before he goes out. And then they come and get him Goldberg style. Like they knock on the door and they're like, all right, follow me. You're going to go out through this way. And then like when he's going out, as soon as he comes out on the stage, like they show how we were watching it from the pay-per-view, like when the camera pans back and like the crowd's going crazy, like, oh my God, it's Sting. You know, it's Sting because they see the crow and they see the scorpion and everything in the graphics without actually seeing Sting's face. And then they cut to another side of the arena where it looks like somebody's recording off of their cell phone, and you see like he's shaking the cell phone, like he's jumping up and down all crazy. So you're seeing the actual reaction of a fan in the arena, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. All right, well, I'm gonna have to check that out when we're done here for sure.
Yeah, definitely check it out. It was interesting to watch. Like most of these things, they normally bore me, and I was like watching the whole thing like, wow, this is cool.
All right, cool. Well, before we go any further, I'm going to take a bite out of that payday. Let's see what this is like here. You could help. Maybe we'll become sponsors, huh?
Right.
I tried that Mick bullshit.
Dad said you're just like really into punishing yourself this week.
Yeah, right. What the hell am I doing? All right, so here we go. My first bite of this thing. Oh my god! Before I even bit it, my tongue could taste how nasty this shit is. Oh my god, this sucks so bad. I'm not even kidding, dude. It's fucking horrible.
Dude, I told you when you asked me earlier, have I ever eaten a payday? Do you know when I first ate a payday? It was, I would have to say I was probably about 15. And it was at that point in my life where it's like, well, I've had Butterfinger and I've had Snickers and I've had, what's the other one? Oh, Henry. I've had pretty much every chocolate bar.
You know what? I'm daring. I'm going to bite into this shit one more time just because I'm never going to eat this again. I can't believe I'm almost in denial. It's almost like Aliens 3, the movie. I can't fucking believe it was that bad in W. Give me a sec here. This is no bullshit, man. I swear to everyone, I'm eating this fucking. Oh my God. Yeah. The moment your tongue. I'm going to fucking eat this. Fuck you, payday. I don't care. Who want you as a sponsor? Who mixes caramel with salt? This is disgusting. I'm not even kidding. It's not even like I expected. I kid you not. I expected for it to be like, well, it's not my thing, but this is fucking nasty, man. Payday's gross.
I told you what it was, man.
I'm throwing this away. You. Oh my god. That is disgusting.
He literally got
fucking disgusting, man. Like, I kid you not. WWE has this habit of having the nastiest shit. Mountain Dew. There goes our sponsors, right? Like, if we're gonna have any of these things. But I can't lie to you guys, man. Like, that's nasty.
Man, what I is it like, Mountain Dew?
You know what I think? I think WWE gets cheap sponsors that no one else will deal with, because everything that I've tried, aside from the Doritos, which are decent when you're in the mood, all of this is nasty. But I think the payday tops it. It's almost as bad as the Mick bullshit.
So wait, so you don't like Slim Jims?
Oh yeah, I actually do like Slim Jims. So they still do the Slim Jim thing, right?
Yeah, they just don't promote it as heavily as they did when Macho Man was doing it for WCW.
Alright, well, yeah, I have a Twix as a backup snack to wash away the payday in case this happens. So I'll be eating Twix during this podcast.
Dude, I told you though, like it's a chocolate bar with no chocolate.
Yeah, well, it's really a chocolate and bar with a lot of salt and caramel and peanut glued together. Who the fuck chews who glues peanuts together as a snack? That's what they did. It's almost like lazy Rice Krispie treats. It tastes like they didn't know how to make Rice Krispie treats, so they bought like the regular peanuts that you get, and they fucking used Elmer's glue and molded it into that nasty abomination of a square. It is so. I could still taste it, man. I'm not even exaggerating. I don't lie about this country. I could still taste it. You did warn me. I didn't know it was going to be this
Twix,
bad.
And the Twix is not going to make a difference.
The worst part about it is that my tongue touched it before I got to bite into it, since it's so fucking hard. You know, it's as hard as getting TNA on fucking TV. So my tongue fucking bit into it first, and I'm tasting it. Like, I already knew what I was in for by the time my teeth reached it. Like, my tongue was already like, you know, it was like I was Daryl and Abraham and Sasha, and the horde was right fucking behind me, and we knew what was there, but it was too late. You know, it was disgusting, man. Shame on you, WWE, for letting people eat that nasty shit. That's gross. Man. I don't have the tongue for that. I honestly thought it would just be not my cup of tea.
Nope. You know, is it actual caramel or is it nougat? Because I always thought it was nougat.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I just know
I think
it's
nougat with the peanuts and the salt on it.
I couldn't taste if it was real caramel or not over the salt and Elmer's glue.
All the salt. Yeah.
You know, I really couldn't. It was so bad. How dare they put that on the same shelf as like Snickers and Almond
Dude,
Joy.
I've literally eaten
Kit
that thing
Kat.
Twice in my life.
Like, how dare it share the same shelf space? That's like if we had like a statue of like some of our great leaders and stuff, and then next to that we had like our great athletes, and then next to that we had like Charles Manson. You know, like how dare that? That thing needs to be like somewhere next to the lifestyle condoms so that you know not to fucking buy it.
Put it next to John Oliver's penis statue that he took home.
Yeah, it was really bad, man. No wonder I've never seen that shit before.
I've seen it, and then like I picked it up, and like you've seen the commercials for it, so
you know
it's
what?
Pretty much like.
I want someone from WWE to eat that fucking thing. I want to see one of them at the commentary table be able to eat that.
Notice you didn't even see Paige eat it. I figured that's what made you actually want to go buy it, because Paige endorsed it.
Man, they give that to the Raw commentary team.
On the interview.
They give that to the Raw commentary team to eat. If that shit touches their taste buds, their speech is going to be slurring like Renee Young in a pay-per-view, man. Are you kidding me? I never figured out why Renee Young speech slurs. I don't know what. Maybe she has a couple of
drinks before
adult
she gets
beverages.
There.
There's nothing wrong with that. I love Renee to death. But I notice whenever she's on a pay-per-view, even this recent NXT, like her S's get a little bit swaggerish. She becomes like a little like back flagger. I don't know why. I don't know if she's putting something into her mouth or whatever. Maybe she's eating these paydays. Maybe no one told her that she didn't really have to eat this shit. Like you just keep it in front of you next to the nasty Mountain Dew.
Oh, it's so funny. We're talking about the Sting thing, and I think the network's re-airing it right now, by the way.
Yeah, I actually just looked at my TV, and yeah. I do see the car driving and Sting showing up and stuff. But yeah, this is horrible, man. That was really terrible. I'm sorry. We've wasted so much time in this episode
talking about
digging around. Like, holy crap. All right. Let's get into some news. Let's get into some news now. The first most important breaking news is Bill DeMott's daughter, Carrie DeMott, was killed in a head-on car crash Saturday morning. She was driving on a highway in Orlando, Florida around 12:30 in the morning when another vehicle veered into her lane and instantly crashed into her and she died. We just want to give our condolences to Bill DeMott. That really sucks. No one should ever really have to go through that.
I'm kind of mad. I'm not going to be an asshole about it, but I'm just kind of mad that Shane Helms was the first one to actually like make this a public thing. Like he tweeted out, accept my condolences. I say just like be classy about it, man. Just you could have messaged him in private and told him that. You didn't have to make it a thing on Twitter.
Yeah, it's rough, man. Sometimes people grieve in different ways. But yeah, we're going to send our condolences to Bill DeMott because no one should have to go through like the shitty loss of a loved one. No one deserves to like lose their life young like that. It's very sad. And I can relate, you know. These kind of things happen. I actually lost a friend over the week. Anyone who knows me knows that I grew up in comic store culture. And, you know, I used to work for a specific comic store. And the owner of that store, I found out over the week, died. He passed away, I believe, of a heart attack. And the family contacted me. His wife contacted me. We're still in contact. And it sucks. You know, I actually, the reason I chose Twix as my backup snack tonight is because whenever we used to close the store, he always used to get a Twix. So that was sort of like a shout out to him. But yeah, you know, it sucks. The Bill DeMott thing really sucks. It's crappy that happened. It's crappy that it happened to my friend. Shout out to the Mitchell family. Shout out to Rudy Ann, the whole Rockwell Comics crew. Terry Mitchell, you know, he was a great guy. He got me into a lot of the stuff. I went to my first Comic-Con, running one of his tables. You know, so the first time I've ever seen a comic convention, I saw it as a vendor, not as a regular customer and stuff. So. You know, I owe a lot of that to him. So yeah, it really sucks. You know, these kind of things do happen. It is rough. Appropriately though, you know, I'll always remember this because of the fact that he passed on Comic-Con weekend. I know a lot of you guys went to Comic-Con. So if it had to happen, at least it's at an appropriate time, right? Something that defined him. Cause he started off selling comics literally like out of boxes without even a store. And he sort of built himself up. To having
that's
like
cool.
A store.
That's cool. Cause I know a lot of people that they tried to start up like that. When I was a kid, one of the first comic books that I got into was Spider-Man. And that's cause my mom worked out at Roosevelt Island at the time. And there was like a little, I don't know what type of shop it was, but they always had the comic books on a rack. So that's where I would go get my comic books from. And then they would do like the little flea market thing. And like you said, it would be people with their comics in a box and I would go out and pick them up.
Yeah. Great guy though. Funny guy. Great family. So yeah, you know, just wanted to shout that out, share that little personal experience. That's what these podcasts are supposed to be, right? You have to add a little personal touch.
Mm-hmm.
So we sort of did that. And yeah, Bill DeMott, you know, our hearts go out to you. We're really sorry. That sucks. So we got the bad news out of the way for the week. I'm sure there's other bad news, but nothing is more.
You wanted to cover TNA, so there's definitely more bad
exactly.
news.
Exactly. Where there is TNA, there is bad news. Are we jumping straight into it? Are we going from this straight into TNA? We should, right? We should.
Just do it. Just do it.
Just do it. Last week, the poor TNA roster thought that the announcement was going to be a new TV deal. It was just that they're going to India, but they thought that it was a new TV deal. Oh, boy. It's just so, so bad. So bad.
Which I'm going to confess right now, because I know you told me earlier, you was like, oh, we're going to cover TNA, and... You should have seen how fucking wide I rolled my eyes when you told me that shit. I tried to sit down and watch this thing.
Yeah. Did you make it?
No.
Oh, brother. I got to cover that shit by myself later on.
I mean, like, I watched enough.
You didn't watch enough.
I watched enough.
We'll get into it, though. We'll get into it. But anyway, as you all know, Matt Hardy, we spoke about this on the rant, but Matt Hardy last week, he won the title. And since then, there's been some new developments. I'm just going to let you guys hear it from the horse's mouth.
My entire life, I have dreamt of becoming the World Heavyweight Champion. And last Sunday night at TNA's biggest event of the year, Bound for Glory, that dream became a reality. And I couldn't have been more proud of that entire evening. It happened in my home state in North Carolina. It happened in front of my family, my wife, my son, my dad was there. It was utterly amazing, fairy tale like stuff. EC3, the champion before me, he couldn't man up and say, you know, Matt, you were the better man on the one. He did it all. He filed an injunction towards me and towards Impact Wrestling. He said that Dixie Carter, his aunt, stacked the deck against him. He went to lawyers, attorneys, the courts. He got all these legal issues involved. And now, with this injunction, I cannot even appear on Impact for the next month. He's basically got Impact Wrestling, and he's holding them hostage.
If there even is an Impact next month.
The fans of Impact, they don't deserve that. No.
I will not be
watching. Fans are the best in the world. They deserve to have a champion that can be on television, that can defend the title. They don't deserve this. I hate it when courts and lawyers get involved. So there's only one thing that's going to make this go away. And 5 minutes ago, I called Dixie Carter. And it was the toughest call that I've ever made. Sickening in many ways.
I can hear it in your voice.
The only way all this goes away and this injunction is dropped.
Liar.
Is if I relinquish the TNA World Heavyweight. I don't want to, but I need to. It's best for Impact Wrestling. It's best for TNA. And I did that. I told Dixie, I'm going to relinquish the title. It gets the injunctions thrown out. Because the Impact Wrestling fans, they deserve the best. They deserve to have a champion. They deserve to have a great product. What do you see the reason? But I'll tell you what, the next opportunity I get to compete for this thing, I'm going to win it again. And this time I'm going to win it where there is no controversy. Because Impact Wrestling and TNA, they deserve to have a World Heavyweight Champion that's honorable, that is going to fight like a man. EC3, you said that I didn't win this. With my son, Max will be proud of me. Hell yeah, he would be proud of me. He's proud of me right now. My wife's proud of me. My dad's proud of me. They're going to be even more proud of me when I win this.
So that's it. They did. He relinquishes the title on YouTube.
Tell us, Matt, where will they be able to tune in and see you win this back?
At GFW, of course.
It's so weird that whole GFW angle, it ended. And it's not like when we had the Alliance thing, WWE, where it ended and some of the guys stuck around and they became WWE guys. It's like,
nope.
No sign of that happening with TNA.
All of them stuck around during the Alliance. They made it seem like they were fired, but they all stuck around ultimately.
Right.
The next Royal Rumble that we had after that Alliance was the most diverse Royal Rumble ever, which I believe was the 2002 Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I don't know.
It had everyone. Great roster. That was around the time of the Here Comes the Pain SmackDown, so that was the roster.
You're right.
So just to give you guys an example, it was just a wild roster during that era. For sure. So anyway, then we had Dixie and Billy Corgan who came out to address the issue. And man, Billy Corgan couldn't have chosen a better time to become part of this wacky, kooky company, could he?
The celebration after Matt Hardy won the world title was an incredible end to the Bound for Glory pay-per-view. However, the following 72 hours has seen our company in chaos. The injunction that was filed by former world champ Ethan Carter set into motion the potential for the world title to be held up, not just for days, but potentially weeks, if not months. I was ready to fight it at all cost. And then I received a phone call from Matt Hardy yesterday. And after talking with Matt for a very long time and consulting with my senior executive staff, we made the decision to accept Matt's to relinquish the world title and, in essence, negate the injunction. What Matt did was incredibly unselfish. He put this company, he put this industry ahead of his own personal gain. And after much discussion, it's also set up something quite unprecedented.
You know, since my coming to TNA, we've had a renewed emphasis on world-class wrestling and clarifying our title picture. And that's absolutely our mandate going forward. But the problem right now is we do not have a world heavyweight champion.
Because you booked it that way.
So after much discussion, deliberation, and really soul searching,
the same shit that ultimately got us here.
We've set up a framework by which we feel coming out of it, we will find a new, true, undisputed champion who will stand for everything that we want this company to stand for.
And this is going to be called the World Title Series. And it starts tonight on Impact.
So at this point, I just feel bad for like everyone who was involved. I feel bad for Billy Corgan. I feel bad for Dixie Carter, even though it's mostly her fault. It's just a big mess. And this was booked poorly. Like, who relinquishes? Think about it.
I feel bad for people like you who are still watching.
Fuck you, man. I'm doing my job for this show. I'm not enjoying this. But, you know, it's just a rough thing. It's really horrible to see the way that this whole thing turned out. And who has a WrestleMania event? Because Bound for Glory is supposed to be like their WrestleMania, where you have such a big moment as someone win the title for the first time, only to on YouTube have them relinquish it due to a kayfabe fucking legal thing that you made up. It's so embarrassing to me at this point. I can't defend this anymore. I keep watching it. You know what? If PWG was on every week, I would talk about that. You know, we're going to talk about the PWG Battle of LA tournament that's going on. We're ready to watch that. We're prepared to cover all of this shit. But right now we have a lot of TNA and that's what we're covering. It's just what's out there, unfortunately. You see, that's another reason it'll be great when it's gone. We'll cover other stuff. These guys will be wrestling other places where there's not as much crazy shit going on. James Storm thankfully got out of that situation because he made his first appearance on Thursday's NXT tapings versus Danny Burch. And apparently Billy Gunn is the contact that got Storm in touch with WWE because Gunn and Storm are really good friends. So prepare
that
for
I didn't know.
Yeah, so prepare for the tag team Gunn Storm. You down for that? Yeah, I don't think it's happening, but that's just what I wanted. But anyway, if for any of you that are waiting for the James Storm, based on the tapings, that should be the October 21st episode that you will see James Storm.
I like how Triple H is bringing the guys over and he's letting them keep their name.
Yeah, that's very cool. And then he tweeted and he said, thanks, JR. Like you said, take the opportunity and run with it. Heading back home to Nash, Vegas. Thanks to WWE, NXT, the fans, and Triple H for a great time. See everyone again real soon. And then he put hashtag SAYDL, sorry about your damn luck.
No TNA added to that?
No, nothing like that. You know what, but imagine if WWE did beer money. Like, imagine if they got Bobby Roode and they did beer money, because I'd mark out. That's like one of my favorite TNA tag teams.
I've already heard people saying that that needs to be the next step, that they need to see if they could get Bobby Roode.
They had such great music. You know, their whole intro and stuff.
Let me see Made if I me forget find about that. AMW.
Let me see if I can find their music, actually. For anyone that hasn't heard it, give YouTube another thing to jabot with us.
Beer money. Dun, 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 yeah. Dun, dun. Yeah, yeah.
Here we go, guys. This is James Storm and Bobby Roode's theme song from when they were Beer Money. Beer money! Hell yeah. This is my shit. Watch your money and your alcohol. Yeah. 'Cause when the tide rolls out and the ships go down, you know you're gonna take a fall. He's from the city. You better step aside, you better run and hide. So yeah, I was like, got your money. I used to love that, man. That's such a great, that team was dope too. They worked so well together. It was just so well done, all of that kind of stuff. And then
what teams are in TNA at the moment other than the Wolves?
They don't really have anything going on. They used to have so much cool stuff. Remember that that team was within Fortune, which was like TNA's four horsemen. It was Ric Flair along with AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels and Kazarian,
part of that. Yeah,
Kazarian and Beer Money, which is Bobby Roode and James Storm. They had such great opportunities to make such big stables. I've never seen a company fuck up so much, because I used to mark out to these guys. I thought that they were really innovative wrestlers. I've never seen anyone like them. I still respect all of them individually, and that's one of our reasons for having such hatred towards TNA, because some of the people that are on here are just astounding, and we've always been marks of them. And to have a roster like that with teams like this, with such dynamic,
And to
fuck
look at where
up,
they're at now.
You know, to wrestling fans, it's like sacrilegious, you know, where we can't believe that this kind of shit was around and the company fucked it up, you know, because we still go back and watch old TNA, watch Beer Money matches, watch James Storm, watch AJ Styles and the rest of them. Those TNA originals were really good, man, because a lot of them are from Ring of Honor. The few that are still really good. The whole entire presence that they had was really something that could have gone far and didn't for stupid reasons, which we won't get into right now. But yeah, I'd like to see. I'm glad James Storm made that move. Maybe they'll get Bobby Roode over there and we'll have the two of them and we can have fix some of the damage caused by this company that almost did, but didn't quite, you know. It's just one of those things. That's just the only way that I could really look at it at this point. You know, I'm still looking at it objectively, guys. I'm just being honest with you about what I see. It's the shits. Oh, man. So, what other news do we have about them?
Are we running news? I thought we were actually running down the episode.
No, we haven't even gotten into the episode yet. We're just doing the general news for them. So Jim Ross said, great get by WWE to swoop up James Storm. James Storm, as he debuted at NXT Thursday night in Orlando, James is a top hand who can work on any roster against any opponent, and most importantly, can teach, coach, and mentor the pups. I love to see WWE hire Bobby Roode, too, as he's a modern-day Arn Anderson. High praise and can do the same positive things that the Cowboy can do. If NXT is going to become WWE's third touring brand, then adding guys like Storm and Roode makes a ton of sense. James was my guest in Knoxville at Ringside with Jim Ross show, and we discussed his possible tenure in WWE if an offer came through. I'm happy that it did. And then Storm tweeted, and he said, TikTok, TikTok, soon it will be a great time to be a dentist. Business is about to pick up. Notice has been sent. People that step up will get knocked out. Dentist offices are about to get busy. Hashtag last call.
Nice.
Now this is where it gets interesting. So, Storm hasn't signed, or it's been reported that Storm hasn't signed the contract with WWE. So TNA offered him a new deal, which includes a big pay increase from his current deal. And when they found out that he was at NXT TakeOver, they offered him even more money to come back. And apparently the reason why they did this is because they wanted Storm to go with them to India for their upcoming TV taping so that he could put over Mahabali Shira. Because okay. Shira... And the reason
that's
they want to push Shira,
storyline with.
Yeah, and the reason they wanted to do this because she was being pushed as part of the deal that has Sony 6 financing some of the India tour. So that's really the only reason they really want to put that guy over. And Storm was offered a deal in WWE very similar to Samoa Joe, where he can finish up his indie bookings before becoming a part of the company full time. Mm. So it's ridiculous that TNA in the meantime, you know, they're trying to get back people that they shouldn't have lost in the first place. And at this point, I hope that people that are from TNA that are in WWE, like Samoa Joe, have spoken to Storm and said, listen, man, don't take anything that they want. Do like AJ Styles did. Don't go back over there. Because they offered AJ and he didn't go. And apparently TNA was talking to other TV stations before joining the Hunt for Bigfoot station. And one of them was WGN America, and they're supposedly talking to four other TV networks about infecting them with TNA. You know, but
not even joining, but infecting.
Yeah, but in the meantime, they're canceling several events. They've canceled their October 29th, October 30th, October 31st, and November 1st events. The October 30th event was in New Orleans and was supposed to be the Battle of New Orleans pay-per-view. So it's a pretty big deal when you cancel an event that was intended to be a taping of a pay-per-view. And I believe that the entire tour was called the Halloween tour. And it's being reported that it was canceled because of the ticket sales. So that just is another example of the problem.
I'm sorry. I didn't sound surprised.
There's really nothing to sound surprised about. You know, nothing at all. In other news, Athena made her NXT debut at Saturday's NXT live event. She was in a tag team match with Gianna Daddio against Alexa Bliss and Peyton Royce, who went over.
Does that name Gianna Daddio sound familiar?
We probably know. I watched so much wrestling, it's all scrambled.
No,
into my
I think,
brain.
What's her name used to tag with her? Zariah.
Well, we may as well talk a little bit about the TNA show today before we jump too far into any more NXT news, because it did happen. I'm just going to run it real fast. I'm not going to torture you too much. This is going to be a long episode again, guys, but we had a lot to discuss. This was a bit of a special episode with everything going on and with the whole, my God, there's so much. But anyway, Pope and Josh Matthews are behind a green screen now. They must have heard our comments constantly here about how sad they look in that little booth, because now they're on a green screen. But it's not even a good green screen. Like Angry Joe and all those guys, they have good green screens. when you're watching his show. That's an awesome green screen. These guys have like the Pope was not the right size next to Josh Matthews. It just looked like the graphics were off, you know?
Okay, you know what's funny? This is one of the reasons I couldn't get through the episode. I just finished watching this movie. I don't know if you've seen this movie. And I'm watching the Pope, and I'm like, wow, the Pope reminds me of this guy so fucking much.
Who?
I just finished watching Horrible Bosses 2.
I've never watched the full first one, but I've seen some of it.
He reminds me of Motherfucker Jones.
Yeah, well, anyone
Jamie
who's seen it,
character.
There's a Horrible Bosses reference for you of this guy. But yeah, so they're in this little green screen room, and here's the thing. We're going to talk a little bit about what's happening here, okay? They run the Matt Hardy video, the one that I played for you guys, right?
Yeah.
And then
they run
the Billy Corgan, Dixie Carter video that I played for you guys.
This is the start of Impact, by the way.
This is the start of Impact. People complain about WWE starting with a long promo from The Authority and Triple H and Stephanie, but at least that promo's in the fucking ring. TNA, I timed it, okay? I timed it. TNA went 14 minutes. With video packages, YouTube clips, cutting back to the Pope and Matthews, a backstage interview with Drew McIntyre, which was basically the backstage fallout from the previous Bound for Glory night, a commercial with the Knockouts 2016 calendar. It was a giant TNA commercial. Like,
now tell us what that first match was.
But wait a minute. Let me ask you a question. You ever get like to a pay-per-view about half an hour early and it's like looping the ad for the pay-per-view, like for you to buy it?
Yeah.
Like that was what the first 14 minutes of TNA was. It was a 15-minute commercial before even showing us the ring for the first time. That's the production that we're dealing with here, guys. Just so that you don't think we're nitpicking or anything. I'm breaking it down. That is a 15-minute of not even seeing the fucking arena that we're going to be at, or the venue. Sorry, they don't have arenas. The venue that they're going to be at. You know, and then they basically just took all of the video clips that they recently uploaded to YouTube and strung them together and made it the first 15 minutes of Impact. They are stretching for time because they don't have a lot going on. And then my next gripe with this is that this is the start of the world title series, right? Where you basically win matches and you get points and then the winner goes on to win the title.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds familiar. It sounds like Bound for Glory.
Bound for Glory stuff we talked about last episode that they were supposed to do.
Why was there no build up to Bound for Glory, the pay-per-view that just passed, which is normally when we have a tournament like this, but now that Bound for Glory is over, we're going to start a tournament like Bound for Glory. It's like using more or less the same system. It's like typical TNA doing things backwards. The same people who you have to hang the title up for instead of pull it down, you know? Fucking make a thing where they have the Bound for Glory first and now we're gonna have the tournament for the title afterwards, and people think I'm just making up complaints about this. Who does that shit, man? You know what I mean? Like, this is there's no logic whatsoever to this. You know, I'm sitting here watching this, biting my teeth, thinking about all of these things that don't really make much sense to me before we've even gotten to the first match. And what's the first match? Bram versus Drew
Bram
fucking
versus
Galloway.
Was it? Oh yeah, it was.
Drew goes over, that's all you need to know. And then after the match, there's more filler. There's the backstage with Gail Kim on possibly becoming TNA champ, which is absurd that they're interviewing a woman on winning this tournament. No offense to women, but this is not the way it should be. I'm not really for this. I like to give Divas a chance, which is incredible, but this is just not working for me. And then we get back to the Pope and Josh. They stretch their time with all of this backstage bullshit, showing the graphics of the versus screen over and over again. And then it does a hard cut to Brooke versus Gail Kim, which, by the way, was a 6.5-minute match. And the reason I'm timing it is because we had a 30-minute Iron Women match on NXT. So I just wanted to give them props. Shout out to them for that 6.5 minutes, almost 7, yo. Future world champs. So the crowd wasn't into this. A few people looked happy to be there, but generally they didn't look pumped. They didn't look the way the NXT crowd looked.
It was, they were talking about how Gail, she's the current champion, and how she didn't come out with the belt because it's not about the Knockouts title. It's about the World Heavyweight title. And, Brooke Tessmacher ends up pulling the upset. Yeah, like I was half paying attention. At one point she goes for eat the feet, but then like misses, and I looked away. And then the next thing I know, I heard Tessmacher's music playing.
Okay. So Tessmacher goes over. Fair enough. And then we had EC3, who had a backstage interview where Mr. Former NXT has the balls to call himself the first pure organic talent created by TNA, which is false because we've named a few pure organic talent created by TNA, even though there are very few. And he's from NXT. You couldn't pick a worse night to say that. Like, what a horrible night. Now, let me ask you something. We're getting to Grado, whatever his name is, versus Rockstar Spud, which was already in progress when it cuts to this match. Did you see this match?
No. because they kept cutting away to show, like, oh, this is the dialogue that they had before the match.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you guys a few details about this match just so that you have an idea of what I saw. I'm not going to call the whole thing, but during the match, Grotto hit Rockstar Spud with an ugly pedigree where he didn't even hook the arms. He tried to do the pedigree, and he did an ugly one. He didn't hook the arms. Spud kicks out. I felt like it was somewhat of a jab at Triple H, obviously. They were somewhat being jerks, but I'm thinking to myself, are they just taking jabs at WWE right now, or would they really do that? Like, I don't think so. So the next spot that made me think this is awkward is Spud does the worm, but he doesn't actually do the worm part where you're on the floor doing the worm, but he does the part where you hop on one foot, but then he just cuts straight to the woo 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 chop. So he does the worm, that full animation, the full Scotty Tohati worm.
And then he probably couldn't do the actual worm.
And then, yeah, and the next spot that caught my eye, Grotto goes for the people's elbow. But when it comes to the running back and forth part, he just keeps running back and forth and back and forth until he's super exhausted, and then he drops the elbow. After this, Grotto attempts the Styles Clash, which Rockstar Spud reverses into a backdrop. And then Rockstar Spud goes for a choke slam and hits it, crosses his arms like The Undertaker does, and goes for the pin, which Grotto kicks out of. And then Josh Matthews says, by God, this is a slobber knocker. And then after that, Grotto kicks out, and Spud does the you can't see me, followed by an attitude adjustment, which Grotto flips out of, and he counters it into Shawn Michaels, and then he counters it into Shawn Michaels' super kick, which Spud counters into the Stone Cold Stunner, followed by the Underdog for the win. And Josh Matthews then says, I don't even think JR could do this match justice.
Did you just hear this? Go back and like, that's the one match I didn't watch. I'm going to go back and watch it.
Like, I couldn't believe that this was happening. Like, I'm sitting here watching it. Like, it started with a weird pedigree. And then I'm like, am I really watching this happen right now? Like, did all of you guys, first of all, you took jabs at AJ Styles too. Like, come on. Like, almost, what is this? Fuck out of here. It's not funny.
Yeah, they're at that point where it's like, look, our TV deal's done in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Like, let's just have fun with it now.
That was really, I haven't seen something that retarded since WCW, though, where it's like you're hearing it and it's like, come on, guys, you really went that low. Like, you did all of those spots, and you're also burying people's finishers, using them as regular moves, and it's just disrespectful to do. And then the whole JR thing on top of it, I didn't find this to be funny. Like, you guys are acknowledging WWE. You're desperate. So fucking
desperate.
Yeah, I'm
not laughing, just by the way, for those of you listening.
Oh, no, it's hilarious. You should laugh.
It's funny. It's fucking ridiculous.
But it is funny. I'm laughing too, but they're just, that's how desperate they've become, man. Like, look at the things that they're doing. Oh, man. So then we have, just moving on straight along, because we don't even have to justify or explain what they did. It's obvious. The next match is EC3 with Tyrus versus Austin Aries with Thea Trinidad, formerly Rosita. I'm guessing Austin Aries and GFW has a gimmick with Rosita, and she looks really smoking hot as a blonde.
I didn't even realize that was her. Again, that was another match I skipped through, because I was like, why is Austin Aries back?
Yeah, they didn't even explain it. They don't know why he's back. They don't know who comes or goes or anything.
So that means this taping took place before they probably even did the storyline that he was written off of TV.
Yeah, but here's something I've mentioned on the show to you guys before. If you've watched wrestling growing up, you know that even all the way into the 90s and stuff, they would always say the following contest is scheduled for one fall and has a 10-minute time limit or a 15-minute time limit. Something happened in wrestling over the past few years where we stopped saying that in all federations. You'll never hear WWE say has a 10-minute time limit. They just don't say anything anymore. It's almost like it's an irrelevant thing because they don't have a book to reach it. But I kind of feel like because of the not wanting to break the kayfabe of things, you should have the time limit there. Just to
it's
give
funny
because
remember,
real
when
thing.
We play, not to cut you off, when we play WWE games and we used to play it in the past, whenever I used to host the matches, I would always put the time limit on it.
Yeah, so it's just one of those things. But here's the thing. Keep in mind, no federations have been saying when there's a time limit. So the next match, EC3 against Austin Aries, it's the only match announced as the following contest is scheduled to 1-4 and a 15-minute time limit. So that made me think, gee, TNA, I hope you didn't announce it as a 15-minute time limit because you plan to have the fucking time expire. And, of course, that's exactly what happens. It ends in a draw. The only match announced in years with a 15-minute time limit, only because they planned on going the 15 minutes, so they had to let the crowd know what was going to happen so it would make
sense.
You
know what?
It's
at
just
least
so
they did
bad.
That, as opposed to they didn't announce
and
it.
Then and just then have the bell ring.
Like, ding, 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 match over.
But you know what? You can't have a match end like that anymore. If it just doesn't work. If it doesn't work, don't do it. Don't do it another stupid way and go, well, we couldn't do it this way. Well, then don't do it at all. You know? It doesn't make any sense. And so that basically happens, and then Aries brainbusters EC3 in rage for losing the match, and then they go back to doing more backstage shit, and they cut to a sneak peek of Ghost Asylum. In the middle of Impact, they like, check out on Destination America, Ghost Asylum.
I don't know if the mic picked up my yawn just now.
We're the first paranormal team to investigate infamous Fenwick Plantation and its tragic treasure chest of betrayal and despair. The guys and I are trying to contact the spirits of Van and Tony, the headless horseman who legend says rides a ghost horse on a mission of redemption and vengeance.
Hey, Chris. What is it? I got some.
They're hunting the headless horseman.
I got something that came out from behind this tree. See it right there?
Oh, look.
See it right there?
Whoa.
Is that you, John?
They're looking through infrared stuff.
We're out here searching for the headless horseman and or even John Fenwick.
I like how he says so casually.
But I'm not really sure
headless
what
horseman.
I'm what is that?
Dude,
you
walking.
See it moving? Yeah, it's moving.
Right there.
Let's go toward
it's
it.
Like it's walking.
It's a huge heat source.
Whoa. Hold on. Fellas.
Like it looks like
keep an eye on it because this is the old hospital. This is where they seen people roaming, things getting thrown. This is also...
Okay, I've lost it, Chris.
Yeah, you still got it?
Too. No,
disappeared?
Wait. There it is.
I've lost it.
This is the strangest thing I've ever seen on thermal. It has the shape of a human, but it doesn't look like a person. As soon as we get in spitting distance of this thing, it just vanishes.
Oh, no. That was the end of the audio. It was just getting good.
Wasn't as good as Huckleberry. Remember when we did Destination America Huckleberry?
Huckleberry! It's got Huckleberry! Oh,
that's
man.
The station that doesn't want TNA. That's the shit that they want to have instead of TNA. A station that legit, it's not even a work thing, a station that legit has a reality show where you have a group of Ghostbusters chasing the headless horseman through the woods.
Oh, man.
Oh, man, indeed. Oh, boy. So that happened. I almost forgot we were talking about Impact because of how absurd this is.
How much more entertaining it was.
So next we had Madison Rain against Awesome Kong.
This is where I gave up.
Okay, so here's the thing here. Throughout these matches, TNA's doing this little double screen thing where you're seeing the two people who are in the match also backstage having an interview together about the match that they're going to have.
While they're having the match. Remember
right.
that. Yeah, it's
while
very jarring.
The match. So anyway, Awesome Kong had some very interesting things to say. In
Awesome
her little
Kong
promo.
Now speaks on TNA.
I'll beat you. I'll beat any man they put in front of me. The seas boil with my rage. The tide is coming.
You know who she sounds like? She sounds like Eris Morn from
She does.
From Destiny.
Yeah, from Destiny.
The seas boil with my rage, Guardian.
You must stop Crota's Bane.
Like, what the fuck is going on here? And you had to see the face she was making, guys, if
no,
you didn't
I saw
see
it. Remember, when you sent me the clip earlier, it kept freezing while she was, when she said, I will beat any man. So I was just like, I have to watch this. Cause I've said in previous episodes, I'm done with TNA. I'll only watch it when we have pay-per-views. So after you sent me that, I was like, I'm going to stomach this episode and I'm going to watch it until I get to that point, which is why this is the last match that I saw.
If this
and
was the
I legit
80s,
replayed it like 5 times.
You know, if this was the 80s, Kong would be so great. She'd be so awesome, no pun intended, because of the way her face contorts and stuff. The
seas
and my rage with her face, man. Holy shit, I was rolling. Like, I legit stopped and used my phone to just camera that to send it to you because I couldn't believe how funny it was.
Man.
I have so much fun with this company, man. Like, I have so much fun. I laugh. I don't feel bitter like most haters, but I just have fun with it. If it's going to be around, screw it. So the seas did boil with her rage because, you know, she went over with her implant buster.
Which is expected.
Over
I see
Madison
her being
Rain.
The only female that actually makes it to the final.
Yeah, and then that was it. Nothing else special happened. We had Anderson versus Lashley, and Lashley went over Anderson with a spear. I believe that was the main event. It ended abruptly after that. And that's TNA. You see what I mean, though? It's just underwhelming. It sucks, man. Like, I'm not just trolling. This shit sucks. I'm watching it. There's no enjoyment to be had here, man. Huh.
Got a mouthful of something to say? Let the guys know. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. TalkBrunch.com. Served hot.
So to get into a little Sting news, Bischoff was on Flair's podcast, and he explained why he changed the finish at Starrcade 1997 during Hogan versus Sting.
I saw that. I didn't think we were going to cover this, but
yeah,
okay.
He basically said that what happened over the course of the year is that he hadn't been working out Sting, and he wasn't engaged, and he'd show up and he'd do his thing, and then he would do it very well, and it was great, and then he'd get on the plane the next morning and he'd disappear, and they wouldn't see him for a week. And at the end of the first meeting, talking about where things were going, when it was over, Hulk and Bischoff both looked at each other and said, man, we can't go there. He isn't ready for this. He didn't get ready for this. It didn't feel to him, to them, that this was a priority. So Hogan took heat for it, for changing the finish. And, you know, that he didn't want to do the finish and everything. But Bischoff is saying that it was his call. Right or wrong, it was his call. Because the original plan was for Sting to go over Hogan clean. But Bischoff was the person who made the decision to change course. And while we're doing Sting news, Rollins did an interview recently where he was asked if it was an honor for him to wrestle Sting at Night of Champions. And he said it was an amazing experience for him to step into the ring with someone he dressed up as for Halloween. And that Sting was, he's dressed up as him 2 years in a row when he was 13 and 14. So it was pretty rad to be with a legend like that. Mm-hmm. And he was asked about that buckle bomb injury. And he said, ironically enough, Sting got a stinger. And it happens to all of us, but it was just bad timing in his situation. He said that they got through it, and Sting's a professional. And he went on to say that what happened to Sting was a freak accident, and though Sting's age may have played a role in that injury. And he says he means nothing against Sting. He's a phenomenal condition, but he's also a 56-year-old man. And he's taken the buckle bomb himself many times. It's just one of those things. It's a freak accident. And he feels terrible. He was definitely concerned about his health. He still is, but after tests and everything, he seems to be okay, so it's all good, and he's going to make a recovery. And that's coming from Rollins. But then Sting also says that he feels great, but then he also says that the MRIs are showing differently. And he says that doctors are telling him that things are not great. And he said that his neck will eventually have to be dealt with, which I feel is implying that there's going to be some surgery involved. So I hope that the whole thing with Sting works out, you know. I really wish him the best, because he is a great performer. What else? We have Blue Pants, who's possibly done with NXT. They were saying that she might possibly not be used anytime in the near future because she was never signed to the company on a regular basis when her character got over. It's being reported that she often made comments backstage that ruffled the feathers of some of the roster. Never something that she did maliciously. And it was also reported that WWE is not selling Blue Pants merchandise at the NXT events over the weekend. But then she tweeted and she said, guys, don't believe everything you read. And then she put like a thumbs up and a smile. So, you know, you can take all of that with a grain of salt. I always take all of this shit with a grain of salt until I see something definitive. And that's one I definitely would. I just thought it was worth bringing up here. There was an Adam Rose creepy message on YouTube where he's just meanly saying that all he wanted to do was bring smiles to people's faces. And you see the shadow of the bunny sitting behind him.
And I was
thinking, to myself, wouldn't it be funny if, like, he's tied the bunny down to a seat and he's torturing him like Daniel from Fear the Walking Dead or some shit? Like, they just went dark with
Adam
Rose.
Making bunny jerky.
Because why the fuck would the bunny's image be there? You know, that's just so weird. It's like, I don't know what's going on anymore, man. There's so much crazy shit.
Creative doesn't know what's going on either.
Yeah, exactly. And while we're on NXT news, WWE fired a couple of talents. They fired Devon Taylor, who was like the Topanga of WWE. She had that thick, nice, sexy look about her, but they fired her instead of Eva Marie. I'm kind of bitter. But apparently her and Cal Bishop, who was also released, it's being speculated that they just weren't developing fast enough. They were informed of their releases about a week ago, and that was it. They're just gone. We don't know any more information right now. Maybe we're starting to see the cleaning of house again. We also have Sami Zayn, who here's some interesting news. You're gonna like this. So Sami Zayn,
I already know what it is.
Yeah. Is, well, act a little surprised, motherfucker. We're doing a show. Like, I ain't out. Like, come on, man. It's like, be excited. Jesus.
No, I get like, dude, you get to report the news all the time. I got to show like I'm doing my homework and I know the stuff.
No one's doubting you here, man. But anyway, Sami Zayn is advertised to appear at Evolve 49 and 50 this Saturday and Sunday. And the interesting thing about that is Sami Zayn is still with WWE. Why would he be at Evolve? But he's advertised to be at both Evolve 49 and 50. Now, for anyone interested, Evolve 49 is right here in Queens, New York. You don't have to go far. Like, it's literally right here this Saturday. And Evolve 50 is in Deer Park, New York. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why Sami Zayn is going to be there. That's definitely different. And I know a lot of people will question Zayn's status with WWE. I personally would sooner question WWE's relationship with Evolve, considering the amount of talent that they've been farming from them.
The news that I have is they already said that it's a non-wrestling role.
Well, of course it's a non-wrestling role. He's recovering, but they are letting him go to the event, so that's pretty cool.
He could be scouting potential talents. It's like, the way I look at it is they know eventually they're going to have to bring up Bayley, so it head over there and see like what divas they can pick up.
Yeah.
To take the mantle when she leaves. Because it's funny, I was sitting here and I was like, other than Asuka, I can't think of anybody else that they would put the belt on right now if they were to send Bayley up to the main roster.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're going to go speed run through a few things. We're going to have a fast one. You know, it won't be very long, but we're going to have a fast one.
I got a flow. You got a what? I got a flow. I got a flow. You got a flow. So let it go. Yeah.
Brother.
How are you picking up Hogan news every week?
So Hogan was on Flair's podcast, and he talked about how his Hall of Fame ring is all that he has left. And he said that it's so sad that he's been taken out of the Hall of Fame and doesn't have a presence in wrestling anymore, and that he plans to cherish that Hall of Fame ring.
I'm being very nice today.
All right. Yeah, you have no interest in hearing about Hogan. We'll wrap it up quick then. Hulkster flow.
I got a flow. You got a what? I got a flow. I got a flow. You got a flow. So let it go. Yeah.
Brother.
Yeah, see, shortest Hogan flow ever.
I'll let you go this week, Hogan.
Yeah, we won't give you any negative feedback.
If you pop up next week, though, the gloves are off.
Yeah, we're going to just spend a long time on you, man. Oh, man. So Paige has some drama. She,
is this the thing I was talking about?
She called out British Airways for having bad service. She tweeted and said, gross service from one of your air stewards who wouldn't help a pregnant lady, Rosa Mendes, put her bag up because it was heavy. And then British Airways tweeted back and they said, hi, Paige, sorry to hear this. Our health and safety policy doesn't allow our cabin crew to assist with such. We also advise our customers that they must be able to carry their bags on our website. We hope you still enjoyed your flight. Cuda. And, she just seems to be very confrontational. You know, I like Paige, but she's a rebel at heart. And there's rumors that WWE's punishing Paige due to having backstage heat, which is why she tapped out to Natty this last week. She also jobbed, I believe, to Naomi on SmackDown. And people are speculating that something happened with Paige since she's being taken out of the title picture. And she's only a few
weeks. I'm pretty sure she's on her second strike.
Yeah, and she's only a few weeks into a new heel run. And a clean tap is considered the kind of thing that WWE uses to punish talent on TV, which something that we've always known.
We've seen it happen.
We've talked about this before. I feel that it could overall simply be that she's her own person with her own personality and voice. And you know how much WWE hates that shit.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, an individual? We're not sure if we're going to be able to do this.
Let's nip this in the bud ASAP.
Yeah. We also have Mark Henry talking about his retirement, where he said, I don't know how I let Vince convince me into signing another contract back in 2013. He did a bit of magic. He's got that magic where you just go in the office and he'll talk you into it. I won't be signing any more contracts. I'm an elder statesman. This is a young guy business, and I'm 100% for it. I love the marketing process. I love the international marketing. I love the talent development. But those are all the things I'll work with the company on to make sure that our business continues to thrive. But there's a bunch of other stuff that I plan on doing. I'm 100% sure this is my final contract. I'm leading towards WrestleMania, and I'll have a little time after that, but that's going to be it for me.
It's cool. I mean, like, he contributed what he could to the business. Honestly, I feel like if he doesn't become a trainer, there's nothing much he can do for the business.
Yeah.
So it's just like, yeah, let him retire. I enjoyed the years of Mark Henry. The comedic roles, the serious roles when he was doing the Hall of Pain. It's all appreciated.
Much appreciated. Much appreciated. Daniel Bryan, it's being reported that WWE won't release him. He's going to see a third doctor, and he has a lot of years on his contract, and they have no intention of releasing him. And I think part of it has to do with them wanting to protect themselves and him. They don't want Daniel Bryan to be hungry to get back into the ring and do desperate things. You know, right. Like if a company like TNA is still around, they'd have him diving, doing headbutts off of the top rope for a fucking bagel. You know what I mean? Like, they don't care about anyone, you know? And at the end of the thing, WWE would also now have given TNA a draw, which, you know them. They'll just swoop in and take whatever they can. And if mm-hmm. he really does have that fever to get back into the ring, which he sounds anxious, he could take it and hurt himself. So I think it's like a two-way protection thing, if anything.
Yeah, because I've already heard him say, well, not heard him say, but it's been reported that he said that if WWE won't let him wrestle, he has no problem with going and wrestling in gyms or going back to Ring of Honor.
Yeah, which isn't bad. It's not a bad idea to see him there, but maybe they could do it the way they have El Generico or Sami Zayn at the Evolve, you know, just have it where he's still part of the company, which I'm assuming with Sami Zayn.
Oh, I'm assuming they would do the same thing with Daniel Bryan, but the whole thing is that's not what he wants to do. He wants to keep on wrestling. He wants to be like a Randy the Ram from The Wrestler, where if he's going to go out, he's going to go out in the ring.
Jesus Christ, what a horrible comparison. Yeah,
it's sad to say, though. But it seems like that's how he is, despite Brie constantly telling him, like, hey, look, we have enough money that she can leave wrestling and he can leave and they can go and find another way to make money and they can live life.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. It's a dangerous business. You know, this kind of stuff happens. I think WWE is being thoughtful. They're protecting themselves. It's a win-win for everyone. I don't think
you can't even be mad at them for that. As much as, like, I love Daniel Bryan as a superstar, it's like, I don't want to see anything happen to the guy. And as much as I don't want to hear that, like, his career is done, if it has to be done for the right reasons, then let it be done.
Agreed. Completely agreed. The Rock has been in serious talks with WWE, and this is the reason why all of his merchandise has been moved from the alumni section back to the current roster section. So we're going to be getting stuff programmed with The Rock hopefully soon.
I mean, they're supposed to be setting up for Rock versus Triple H at Mania, right?
Yeah, we'll see if that still happens, because there was supposed to be Rock Triple H with the Ronda Steph thing. They might still do the Rock Triple H, and that would still be
right,
cool.
Right, yeah.
And we also have Undertaker, who's going to be working more. We've already seen that. So saying he's going to be is like an understatement, because Undertaker this year of 2015 has worked more than he worked any of the previous years in a long time. We've seen him around a lot. So mm-hmm. that's really cool. But he's up to work more dates going forward than he has in the past. You know, he's booked for their Mexico tour. He's feeling better physically, and it's because he's healed from all of his past injuries and his past surgeries. So right now, Undertaker's feeling good enough that he's ready to, like, roll again, which is really cool.
You know what? I'm looking at it as, like, yeah, he's feeling good to roll, but do you think this is the final ride?
I don't know. I've been hearing that this is the final ride since the Attitude Era. People thought he was going to retire for a while, and he's still around, man. I think it's different for everyone, so I'm not going to rule out. You know, I have no problem with him staying around long term.
He's shown us in the last match with Brock that he can still go. He's not busting out those suicide dives off of the off the middle rope and whatnot, but he can still put on good matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So moving along, we have a John Cena update here. He's booked for Madison Square Garden on December 26th, which is their Christmas show. But aside from that, he'll be missing everything before that. He's going to not be on Survivor Series. He won't be on TLC. He's not going to be on the European tour. And it turns out that the reason Cena's going to be taking the time off starting from October 26th until December is because he's going to be working on a reality show for Fox that's set to broadcast over spring. It'll be six to eight weeks worth of tapings that start on the 26th. And Cena's also going to be on The Nest with Tina Fey, which is coming out December 18th. So he's leaving to do other things for a little while.
So it's not even like he's resting when he goes. He's just doing even more opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. He's just sort of networking and stuff, expanding, getting his brand out there.
Mm. I mean, you know what? He is getting older. You want to, like...
Yeah, he is getting older. It might be time for him to do that.
What The Rock's doing.
He might be time for him to do the Scorpion King.
Scorpion King 5?
That's how we do each time, right? That's how we're going to get all these wrestlers. You could do the next Scorpion King movie, and then from there on, the sky's the limit.
Didn't Batista do the last... Batista was in the last one, right?
Yeah, then he could do the next Doom. then he could be in the next Fast and the Furious. Then he could be the next Tooth Fairy.
I was about to say Tooth Fairy, yeah. The Easter Bunny.
You know what you do with the next Tooth Fairy? You put the two in front of the T-O, so it's the Tooth Fairy.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Look at that.
We just talked about how the old episodes were corny. Don't throw that joke in there.
Oh, boy. JR talked a little bit about Brock Lesnar versus Taker at Hell in a Cell. He doesn't seem to be enthusiastic about it. He said that the thought of Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman were somewhat underutilized Monday night in a subdued, or so it seemed, Boston. Why can't a disrespectful heel wanting to make a name for himself interrupting a Heyman promo, and then Lesnar then takes matters into his own hands and woodsheds some poor bastard to provide the fans some hint of physicality? The Taker versus Brock Hell in a Cell match is tepid at best, since their SummerSlam match, which had a unique finish that isn't talked about enough, in my opinion. So he's definitely not feeling that.
I think back to it, and it's like, isn't the last time they faced in Hell in a Cell, didn't Brock come away the winner? That's when Taker had he was doing the American Badass gimmick.
Oh, the bloody match where he was bleeding all over the floor and shit?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was a rough one, man. Go back on the network and see. I don't remember what match it was, but if you haven't seen it, Undertaker bleeds like a fountain.
Yeah, Ric Flair bleeding.
Yeah, it's some serious shit on there. Triple H did a Q&A Wednesday afternoon. I'm just going to run over the questions and answers real quick. They asked him about wrestling in NXT. He said, ha, no, that would be an appropriate allocation of resources. They asked him if there are any other areas he would like to revitalize. He said, possibly the cruiserweights, always something to look at. They asked him about the possibility of a secondary title in NXT. He said, never say never, but he's comfortable where they are right now. But if the situation is right, they asked him if he sees Apollo Crews as an NXT champion, and he said that he certainly has the potential to, and that he believes in Apollo Crews. And then they asked
Apollo Crews as world champion at one day if they ever want to make a black champion.
Yeah, right, we'll see. And then they asked him how he feels when NXT fans chant, "This is awesome," and he said, "It's why we do what we do, the crowd on his feet, not for awesome moments, but for the whole night." And they asked him about female talents that he wants in NXT, and he says that they're constantly looking for them and constantly creating them. So they asked why what they're doing with the women's in NXT isn't being done to the main roster. And he said it will. There's a saying, Rome wasn't built in a day. And these women will not be denied. Hashtag taken, not given. So then they asked him who they should keep an eye on leading into TakeOver in London. And he said, look for big things out of Asuka. I know her name's spelled Asuka.
It's Asuka, but I'm going to keep pronouncing it Asuka until it gets burned in.
Looking forward to the debut of Nia Jax and also Apollo Crews. Hashtag too many to list.
Have you seen Nia Jax in the ring?
I seen shots of her. She's really big, huh?
Yeah, that surprised me.
That's a big bitch. Anyway, they asked him about the possibility of an NXT title match at WrestleMania 32, and he said you'll see one at WrestleMania weekend for sure. And they asked him about what his favorite NXT match was, and he said there's a lot: Sami Neville, Sasha Bailey, and he's sure that there will be one tonight, because remember, this was Wednesday just before TakeOver. So it does sound like slowly he plans to progress the NXT style over to the other federations. Everyone's too damn impatient. We saw this NXT thing get built up so fast from where it used to be, and everyone's still like, when is this gonna happen? When is that gonna happen?
Patience, it's a virtue.
Yeah, right? It really is. So, wrestling marriages. Batista got remarried for a third time to Sarah Jade Paul. Orton's getting married to his fiance. Rosa Mendez's engagement will be featured on Total Divas. Rusev proposed to Lana, as we saw tonight on SmackDown. If you guys didn't already know, he did in a swimming pool, and they filmed the whole thing in their home in Nashville, Tennessee. And you see what I mean, TNA? Who says nice things can't happen in Nashville?
I don't like how they handled the whole thing.
Yeah, they sort of brought some kayfabe in with a little bit of the fake. And I guess it's because it was in the spotlight. They were sort of forced into it, but they should have handled it better. We'll get into that though. Let's just finish up these things. We have the whole WWE Divas thing. They spoke a little bit about the fact that the Divas are not going to be traveling to Saudi Arabia for the upcoming tour. And the reason for this is because Saudi Arabian laws, only the male WWE talents are allowed to work. So the tour started Thursday and it ended Saturday. And I've said this before, but maybe they just shouldn't go to places where the whole WWE family isn't welcome. Like, how hungry are you for money? Like, this is nothing personal to Saudi Arabia or any other cultures, but this is just like if I invited you over for Christmas dinner, but not your wife.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, hey, you know, come on, McWrestling, let's go have some Christmas dinner. Let the wife stay home. You know, like, get the fuck out of here. And like, what? Like, that's ridiculous. It's just hospitality is something that should be universal amongst all cultures. And no offense to anyone there, but if we can't have the full divas, if you don't respect the women the way you respect the guys, then fuck off. We're not going to go over there anymore. Like, I wouldn't go somewhere that my girlfriend's not invited. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, I thought their whole reasoning was like they find the women dressed too, they're like scantily clad and whatnot, and that's why they don't want them there.
But it's like if you don't like the women, then you don't like WWE. That's part of the WWE thing.
It's all part of the package.
Yeah, it's almost like if someone told you that they don't like your wife, and you said, well, if you don't like my wife, you don't like me. You know, it's almost like we come together. If this WWE is really a family, then represented in these kind of things, you don't need to go to no Saudi Arabia. Then they don't welcome the women, well, then don't go there. Let them catch it on the network. $9.99. Yeah.
You know,
that's just my opinion. I don't see how you can possibly just be like, okay, well, in your culture, you don't respect women enough to let them work, so we're gonna just adhere to that shit. Just my opinion.
Yeah, it makes no sense because if they're watching the program, you're seeing the women in the intro, so like, come on.
Yeah. Lita's now working with WWE behind the scenes full time. The rumors are that she's working creative, possibly, and production, and she's in some sort of a liaison role, and she's been involved with meetings and discussions backstage. So now they have backstage Lita, and they have Sarah Del Rey. So that's good. Very good stuff going on there.
Better than what's going on in TNA.
Yeah. And Steve Austin, last week we reported to you guys that Austin was boycotting WrestleMania if the Freebirds aren't inducted. Well, Austin tweeted, and he said that the reports of him boycotting WrestleMania 32 are once again pure bullshit. The end. So that's coming from Austin. Always like to follow up our stories if something to the contrary is reported. So Kelly is upset. She did an interview where she complained about WWE not being supportive of her new show, which airs directly after on. And her statement is that the fans have watched every week and they're so supportive of it, and that the lead-in is. So it's perfect because fans also want to know what it's like after life after WWE. And it's the perfect transition into that. And the WWE hasn't been very supportive, so that's kind of upsetting. And she's given them so many years and they're on the same network and it's right after. They haven't given any support whatsoever. And they support other guys like Stone Cold and The Rock when they do things. They support them fully. But her, it's like, really? And she doesn't understand because they didn't have a falling out. She left on good terms. And now that she's doing this on her own and she's on the same network, they should be more supportive. So that has been upsetting to her. But people that she used to work with and a lot of wrestlers watch it, show that. So that's great that she has their support. Maurice came on this season, so it was cool and it's been good. And I'm thinking to myself, damn, this girl is hungry. Like, first she was talking about trying to wrestle Paige, and now she wants support from the WWE Network. Didn't I tell you last week that all of this was AKA my modeling gig didn't work out too well, so now I want to grasp onto anything else? So we're going to help her out here. Go check out Kelly's show.
Where can we find that again?
Well, you can find that on... See, we support her. It's not like we're bastards. Kelly. Fuck out of here.
But she contributed so much for the business. I can't even.
You heard what I said last week, man. Bottomless. CJ Parker signed the deal with New Japan Pro Wrestling, so there's some more bad news for you right there.
Yeah, we mentioned this a few episodes back when we first thought that he was retiring from wrestling altogether, but it turned out he was retiring the name, or I guess the character of CJ Parker.
Uh-huh. And in other news... Yep, it's that time. It's a short one, but it is that time again. Okay. We have Tammy Sitch, who appeared in court this past Wednesday for a preliminary hearing regarding the June 1st and June 20th arrest in Towingsing Township, Pennsylvania. Sitch will be arraigned on November 10th at 8:30 in the morning. She's being charged with the following offenses... DUI, general impairment, incapable of driving safely. DUI, highest rate of alcohol. or greater second offense, disregarding a traffic lane, driving without a license, operating a vehicle without required financial responsibility, reckless driving, and driving at a safe speed. Her June 20th one is the same thing, more or less, DUI, general impairment, incapable of driving safely, careless driving, driving without a license, disregarding a traffic lane. So, Tammy Sitch is in a bit of trouble this week.
Again.
It happens, you know?
It doesn't happen. You just got cleared out of trouble last week. Like, come on.
What happens to her? What can I say, man, you know? It's a rough time.
Not good.
But that was it. I think that's like the only thing that we have as far as criminals are going, man. You know, better than nothing, right? Better than if everybody was committing crimes. Oh, man. I'm never going to get tired of that.
I love the little guitar riff. I love it.
What's not to love about that, right?
Yeah.
So, what else do we have before we get out of here? We have Jericho, for some reason, was promoting GFW. He tweeted and said, check out this excellent trailer for GFW Wrestling. I thought that was weird.
Did you actually watch the trailer? Was he being sarcastic?
I didn't watch the trailer at all. I didn't watch the trailer at all.
He must have a friend over there or something, I guess.
Very possibly.
Yeah. Which is funny, because I totally forgot when you were asking me about the Sting thing earlier. They actually had him mention TNA about how he went there for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's someone that we haven't heard from for a while, and we're going to touch base on that person right now.
This better not be Virgil.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, you
Hello,
better.
You too.
She used to be a wrestler. Now she's a teacher in Tokyo. China's on YouTube. Tokyo, China.
I think I know what news this is. I didn't think you were going to cover it. I didn't think it was newsworthy.
Her agent mentioned to the Courier that she has not been paid for her trip to Scotland back in August with the Scottish Wrestling Entertainment Promotion, and that they're threatening legal action. And he's quoted saying, China did a show in Scotland at the end of August. We have not been paid yet. Unless I hear from David Lowe as to when he's going to pay, we will need to file a lawsuit. And apparently, while she was at the event, China signed autographs and took photos with fans and also appeared in front of 1,300 fans. And it was at a SWE live event at Caird Hall in Dundee. And actually 13,000 fans, sorry. And also, according to SWE boss David Lowe, China received payment through signing autographs.
What?
And then he says, he's quoted saying, I've just opened the email and I just don't understand. When we book wrestlers, they either ask for a few or work towards, they either ask for a fee or work towards that fee with autograph sessions. It's how it works every year. China was hugely popular and she smashed her fee at the sessions.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know, she might just be lying. That's what she does. That's what I do. That's what I do. So there's another soundbite for you right there.
Oh, man.
Want to chat with the guys? Then be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. TalkBrunch.com.
I think that's it for the major news.
I've got nothing left. Just the WWE 2K16 stuff.
Yeah, what's going on with that? WWE 2K16 is always good news.
Yeah, they pretty much just announced what the DLC pack is, which I said in the pre-show, I believe, where I said I was gonna have a gripe with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you get some pretty cool things out of it. You get the accelerator, which we get every year. That's $1.99. The accelerator pretty much just helps you, like, if you're not happy with the way somebody's overall is, like, you want to put Cesaro up to a 91 and they had him at an 88, you can do that. You have the My Player Kickstarter, which is pretty much when you go and start the My Career mode, you get extra attributes to make your character a little bit stronger than they normally would have been. That's going for the price of $9.99. You have the Legends Pack. That'll be $8.99, which comes with the Big Boss Man, Dusty Rhodes, Lita, Mr. Perfect, Roddy Piper, and Trish Stratus. We also have the 2015 Hall of Fame Showcase, which has playable matches that include Macho Man versus Jake the Snake, Rikishi versus The Rock, I don't know why, but Alundra Blaze versus Paige, Larry Zbyszko, and
Before you finish this list, real quick, and I've said this on the show before, I've noticed in WWE a pattern. Whenever people are released in the games, those people usually turn out to be people that they're going to do programs with. Brock Lesnar was in the game before he returned to WWE. The Rock was in the game before he returned to WWE. I'm just noticing a pattern here. Now you have Alundra Blaze versus Paige as a match on the new game. Don't be surprised if we're going to see Alundra Blaze return in some capacity.
Well, remember, we did mention this on the last episode when she took the shot at Nikki.
Yeah, exactly.
And she was like, don't be surprised who Natalya may show up with as a tag partner. So like you said, anything is possible.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll definitely see.
Yeah, some of the other matches we have here was Larry Zbyszko and Arn Anderson versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Dustin Rhodes, Tatsumi Fujinami versus Ric Flair, the Bushwhackers versus the Natural Disasters, the Outsiders versus Harlem Heat and Stevie Ray. And I don't remember if I just said it, but that will be $9.99. We have the New Moves Pack, which will have over 30 moves, including moves like the Corner Enziguri, made popular by Nikki Bella, the Avalanche Ram, made popular by Paige, Sidewinder Suplex, made popular by Kevin Owens. I think that's the Stenalizer, which is weird because I think I saw him use that in a demo footage, so I don't know.
Okay, you're going to buy just a big $90 bundle, right? Because that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, it makes no sense for me to buy it in bits. I figure you actually save like $10 when you buy the bundle also.
Yeah, I'm probably going to pre-download it tonight. That's something that's a priority. That and Halo, I think, are my only big games. And for now, I'm going to do WWE because, again, that's just something that's podcast-related that we're going to use, not only as a game that I'm excited for, but as a tool that we'll use on here. So, sure, why not, right?
Yeah. The last part we're getting is the Future Stars Pack, which will have playable superstars from NXT, such as Samoa Joe, Blake and Murphy, and get this, Diego and Fernando.
Oh, boy.
From Los Matadores.
Why? That gimmick's practically run its course.
It's run its course, and I don't think I missed an episode of NXT. That tag team has never been on NXT.
Yeah, not as Diego and Fernando, I don't think they have. They might have, though. Don't rule it out. They might have. It's very possible that they were. I don't know for sure. But they could have. Who knows, man? But it's funny you're bringing up them because, Carlito was asked in an interview if he was going to return to WWE.
You see, you wanted to shoot down when I brought down Carlito, and this is the third week in a row that we have Carlito.
Yeah. They apparently wanted to make him part of the new revised Los Matadors gimmick. But when he was asked in the interview if he was going to return, he just smiled and walked away. And that could be taken many ways. It could be taken as hell no, and it could be taken as you never know. But it's funny because Carlito, when he was here, he didn't seem happy. I heard he wasn't happy. And even, I don't know if anyone remembers when he had the Hall of Fame where he inducted his father. But this is what he said when he got on stage, just to remind you guys.
I'm used to working in bigger halls and high school gyms, so this sounds kind of nice to me. Thank you. But seriously, guys, it's been a long night. Let's get this over with. I would like to though know. I could totally see how that the talent meeting went. Like, oh, we're gonna bring out the Click, Razor Ramon. It's wonderful. But then we got Ultimate Warrior at the end. You know, we need something in the middle there to kind of, you know, people are gonna be tired to bring them down a little bit. Send out the colognes. And we got our time cut. It's like I never left, ladies and gentlemen.
Aww.
Yeah.
This is why I didn't want to open mic. This is about my dad, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just here to have a, you know, honor him, and this is about him, and I love him so much.
All right. Well, we're going to keep it short and sweet, and Carlito's definitely going to keep it real. So here we go.
Didn't say anything bad.
I said real, not bad.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that after that, they're still willing to bring him back.
Yeah, that was a direct jab right there. It was kind of funny, though.
It's funny because I think back to one of the segments they had backstage. I forget who it was attacking Ric Flair, and it was so out of character for him because Carlito was a heel at the time. Ric Flair gets attacked backstage, and then one of the divas runs up, and she's like, oh, my God, are you okay? Are you okay? And you literally see Carlito, like, sidestepping into the shot just so he could be seen on TV.
That's terrible. Yeah, well, he said that, and that's just the way that he felt about the entire thing, so I'd be very surprised if he comes back. They'd have to offer him a sweet deal, and I heard the first time they lowballed him.
Yeah.
You know, and ironically, you know what cut his time in that Hall of Fame speech?
Hmm.
Mr. T ran long.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't watch that Hall of Fame.
That was... Oh, you don't know what you missed. The Mr. T speech was epic.
I heard with the whole... My mama!
Yeah, that was one of the best Hall of Fames ever. You're cheating yourself not watching it. Really good Hall of Fame. Rey Mysterio won a title. He won the Destiny Heavyweight title on October 3rd in Mississauga, or however you say it, Ontario.
I saw the congratulations on Twitter.
He defeated Justin Gabriel and Ricochet in a triple threat match. I think that's it for relevant news. We're running late, so I don't want to spend too much time on, like, the other stories and stuff.
Yeah, I just closed out some of the stuff I had. Like, there was, like, Cameron news.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck about that.
Yeah, actually, I didn't even read it.
Okay, good. Then we're moving along and things are going tight. All right, NXT TakeOver. We're going to just talk about that a little bit before we, continue this. I thought it was a good show. Interesting. It didn't seem as over the top as some of the other NXT takeovers did. This one felt a little bit more.
It seemed like a regular NXT.
Yeah, this one seemed a little bit more like a regular NXT. The cool thing was the pre-show where the Rhodes family unveiled the Dusty Trophy with his boots, and that looked really cool. I liked that entire opening thing, and of course they used Cody Rhodes to give the speech about his father because he's the best talker up there.
Yeah, he's better than Goldust.
Yeah, and I've heard Goldust has a loose cannon with a live mic. So just to run some results, we're not talking too much about the matches, but we had Finn Balor and Samoa Joe against Dash and Dawson, and Joe and Balor went over. That was correct in our predictions, right? We predicted Joe and Balor would go over for this one, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, this was the first pay-per-view without a demon Finn Balor. I was kind of disappointed. They've never done that for an NXT takeover before. I thought
maybe
he'd come out as the
demon is only for when he's doing the one-on-one thing. So it's just like he doesn't need to tap into, I guess, the best potential.
Right. But at the same time, they can't say that because one of the few times that he was the demon, one of the first times he was with Hideo Itami. Remember the interview at the end where he's like, Finn, something change? You know, and he was the demon then. So yeah, he uses it as a tag team. That's where it was debuted as, but whatever, they chose to do that.
I get, but you know why they probably didn't do it? I guess the whole fact that he had to wrestle two matches, so they didn't want to have him come out with the paint, it gets smeared, and then he had to come back out again with it, and it didn't look as good.
Yeah, and he can't only come out with it for the second match because it might take too long. There's not enough
time.
Alright, so anyway.
It's not like Sting slapping on the face paint and then doing the eye thing. That probably takes him like 10-15 minutes. We've seen Goldust put his face paint on, and that takes him like 3 hours.
Yeah, exactly. So that makes sense. All right, so next we had Rhino and Baron Corbin against Jason Jordan and Chad Gable.
I love this match, by the way. And it goes back to what I was saying, where these guys have the potential to be the next world's greatest tag team. Like, as soon as they came out their attire, I was just like, yep, it's the world's greatest tag team.
Yeah, and I can't believe that Corbin and Rhino won. I was shocked about that. We were wrong. I don't think we had it for them. And one thing I got to say about Rhino must have more brand shirts than anyone in the world. Because I've seen Rhino wearing ECW, the default ECW shirt, the default WWF Attitude shirt, the default TNA shirt, the default NXT shirt. It's like that motherfucker's like, I'm getting my free shirt wherever he goes, man. You'll see him wearing the brand shirt. I've noticed that about Rhino,
it's
man.
It's just like how Sting says in his in the special, where he's like, I want to be able to say that I wrestled at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Rhino wants to be like, look, I have this shirt. I used to wrestle for this company.
Yeah, because every time I see Rhino, whatever company he's in, that's the shirt that he's wearing. He makes sure he rocks that brand shirt, man, that generic shirt.
I just love that of all people, he's the one wearing the shirt that says NXT, the future is now.
I guess, right? Well, he's a supporter. So next we had Asuka versus Dana Brooke, which was an awesome match.
I love all her transitions that she has into submission moves.
Yeah, I love the Dana Brooke rolling while Asuka held her in the hammerlock. That was a really cool spot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, very talented. Good timing. I like the fact that they gave you fucked up chance when Dana slapped Asuka.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that she did the butt bump.
Better than Naomi.
No. She did what's his name? Funky Weapon.
Oh, okay.
The New Japan Pro Wrestling guy?
Yeah.
He's Finn Balor's former tag team partner before Finn Balor made the Bullet Club. Ryosuke Taguchi.
Yeah, there's no way I was going to be able to pronounce that.
Yeah, Ryosuke Taguchi. He's the guy who comes out with the green tights and he does the butt bump in New Japan, all of his moves. And the back of his trunk, the back of his tights say funky weapon on his ass. And he does like a lot of bump bumps. That guy's awesome. He was the one, if anyone watched Wrestle Kingdom, the last Wrestle Kingdom with JR as the commentator, he's the guy who gets like the slot machine Titantron. But yeah, funky weapon. Really cool. Really good guy. I have some New Japan to catch up on, so I'll keep you guys posted. I have a few New Japans. And I also got back into Noah, so we'll be talking about that. I've been watching Noah.
I haven't watched Noah since, Hideo was over there.
Yeah, so I'm gonna be checking out Noah, and I have a little PWG. I'm expanding a little bit more. Not really expanding, cause we've always watched these things, but just now's the time to like really.
With TNA on its final leg.
Yeah, I guess so. Overall, this Asuka Dana Brooke match was really good. If, I don't know if there's any other spots you wanted to talk about before we move along.
I like the rolling back fist that she hit Emma with.
That was cool.
Her finisher, which pretty much looks like a Taz mission or a rear naked choke, if you want to call it that.
Very solid stuff, man.
Dana Brooke runs in at the end. Asuka roundhouses the shit out of her, which knocks her out. I like how she goes out of the ring and she looks at Emma. And Emma kind of just turns away like, I forgot my lunch money this week.
Yeah.
Double like, it next week.
That is so awesome about her. I love the way her character does that.
Yeah.
And then we had like a backstage thing. Well, what was the, what we sort of finished? It was the task mission basically. But then we had the backstage fallout where Dana's on a stretcher and she's delirious and she thinks that she's the one who won the match. And Emma's concerned looking over her in the stretcher and Dana's
she's telling the doctor like, please check her because she's making no sense right now.
Yeah, because she's like, I won, right? I beat her really fast. And then all of a sudden Asuka's to the side looking over Dana and she pats her on the head and she goes, oh, poor Dana. And then she gives Emma that look again, you know, that evil look that she gave her on the side and then just
with the smile, yeah.
It's so awesome, man. That's such a well done thing. I can't wait to see more Asuka.
I don't know like, why how that cool kind of is turned this? Me on.
Yeah, it really, how cool is this that this person came out of nowhere and is like high, like it's a high level threat. It's like when you're playing an MMO and you see like enemies that they don't even tell you their health. Their health is question marks and their font is red. You have no business fighting
this
fucking thing.
That's like fucking Destiny when you first discovered that little hidden cave and you went down there the first time and you were still like level 17.
Yeah, it's one of those things. She's high level. Asuka is awesome. I look forward to Wednesdays now all the time. I wish it was Wednesday right now. I just can't wait to see more NXT. It's become so good. It really has. So Sasha versus Bayley was an incredible match.
You skipped a couple of matches.
Oh, did I?
Dude, we still got Tyler Breeze versus Apollo Crews, Baron Corbin and Rhino versus Balor and Joe, and now we have the main event.
Right. All right, well, Tyler Breeze, Apollo Crews was a decent match, you know. There's not really much to say as far as that goes.
Yeah, honestly, nothing really stood out in that match. Like, it went over just the way we said it was going to go over.
Yeah, there's nothing really to quote. We're really over time from the amount we talked about, so I don't want to spend too much time. We will talk about the results right now of the tag team match, which I will say I was very surprised. You want to go into that a little bit?
Well, with the tag team match, my heart froze like right at the start when you heard Dusty's voice before anybody came out. I thought that was cool that they had that little thing.
Very awesome, yeah.
Yeah, the match opens up with Balor and Rhino circling around. Joe eventually gets in and he gets like really aggressive with Rhino. I think Rhino tags in Corbin and Corbin gets the upper hand on Rhino throughout the match. Balor tags in, runs off Corbin's back and shotgun kicks Rhino into the corner, which I thought was pretty cool. He runs back to Corbin, but then Corbin reverses it with the big boot, but then he counters with the enziguri. What happens after that? Balor ends up on the apron, which Rhino goes after the leg to take him out again. Joe hits his Uranagi spot off the corner. They had that really cool spot with the end of days getting reversed into the DDT. The gore gets reversed with the kick to the face.
That was very cool.
Yeah. And then the match ended pretty much like the first match where Rhino goes for the gore, but he gets kicked in the face. Joe sets him up for the muscle buster and Finn hits the coup de grace for the win. Then the Rhodes family comes out. They all celebrate in the ring. And I think Cody gave a little speech about John Wayne. I think he said did Dusty die on the same day that John Wayne died?
I believe he said that, yes.
Yeah, and he tells him like John Wayne had this little quote that he used to say. Forgive me, I can't remember the quote off the top of my head right now.
Nah, don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a good match. But what are your opinion? What's your opinion of the results of that being the winning team?
I mean, kudos to them, but I don't like it.
It's different because they've always had in the old NWA, there were always tag teams where it was like two random people together would win matches and things of that nature. But I just kind of felt for the Dusty Rhodes thing. I would have liked for it to help establish an already established
tag team.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have went to
Chad Gable and Jason Jordan. It would have made the most sense.
Right. Because like I said, with me, I get this whole they're a New Age World's Greatest Tag Team. So it would have made sense to give them the trophy and then elevate them up, eventually put them on the main roster.
Yeah,
like, those guys are money. When Chad Gable picked up Baron Corbin, I was just like, wow.
I really like that team, man. They're really well done. I'm surprised about the way they did it. I guess they really must have been okay with it.
Yeah,
and I've been hearing a lot
of
people saying that Samoa Joe's not going to ever be pushed to the main roster, and he's getting a lot of heat because he hurt Tyson Kidd, and he did the muscle buster wrong. I don't think he did the muscle buster wrong. I went back and watched it. It seemed like a freak accident. And for anyone who feels WWE is really punishing this guy, do you really think that they would allow him to be in the Dusty Rhodes tournament, win the Dusty Rhodes trophy?
And still keep doing the same finisher?
And be hitting the finisher on greener people?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure that they're objective enough to realize this is just a mistake. You know,
yeah.
And it's not that he made the mistake. Just accidents happen in the ring, wear and tear on the body. Sometimes things just give when you're doing this. It's not that he hit him with a bad muscle buster. Just wanted to throw that in there.
That's just like the same people that want to be like, oh, Seth injured Sting. Like, both of them said it was just like a freak accident in the ring when Sting collapsed. Like, things happen.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're ready for Sasha versus Bayley?
Yes, we are.
Things I liked. I liked that Bayley dressed in Iron Man attire since it's an Iron Man match. She came out in Iron Man attire.
You picked that up, but you didn't pick up when Blake and Murphy did that.
Oh, fuck Blake and Murphy. That's why I didn't pick it up. Well, yeah,
that
it also
went over my head, by the way. I didn't even realize that.
What?
That she was wearing the red and gold for the Iron Man theme because it's an Iron Man match.
Yeah, and there was a robot face, like, on her tights, I believe, and
It was.
It's sort of an old school Bayley throwback because if anyone recalls when she first came out with this Bayley gimmick, she told, I think it might have been Renee Young, I could be wrong, but she said that after the match, she'll go and play robots with her. And that used to be her thing, playing robots and doing the robot and things with robots. Before they fixed the gimmick and made it what it is, it started with robot shit. So I thought that was like a funny throwback to the way that she started. Cool spots and stuff. During the chain wrestling, Sasha, took a nasty bump right on her head, it looked like. You saw that crazy bump she took?
Yeah. Where it looked like her neck might have been broken.
Yeah, I was worried for the rest of the match, but I guess she was okay.
Now,
it wasn't really on her head, because when they replayed it was more or less her shoulder and her neck, but from the reverse angle, it looked like her head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the fact that Bayley at one point pulls Sasha up from her corner when she's injured in the corner, sort of for like a mutual respect hug.
A show of respect, but then she doesn't, like, pretty much give her back the respect. She shoves her down.
Yeah, she basically knocks her down. So the first pinfall was Sasha, but the way she got it was unique because the refs have been being distracted for years, but I've never seen it quite like this before. Sasha goes for a cover and then uses the ropes, but the ref sees it. So she argues with him in the corner, and the ref's back is against the turnbuckle arguing with Sasha while she's screaming at him. So Bayley charges in. Sasha dodges out of the way, and Bayley stops short, almost hitting the ref when Sasha dodges. And then Bayley basically charges in afterwards at Sasha, and then Sasha dodges out of the way. Well, I mean, the other way around, they do it in reverse, where Bayley dodges now when Sasha comes in, and she stops short of the ref. But then she climbs the turnbuckle, smashing him in the corner, obscuring his view while she pokes him in the eye at Bayley, and then rolls her up for the second cover. So it was like really a chaotic exchange in that corner, but I liked the transition to it. You guys have to go back and see that. And we also have Bayley countering Sasha's corner double knees into a catch snake eyes almost, which was really dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, they mentioned that she hit, I believe, face first, but it looked like... Yeah, I guess it was the proper thing.
Yeah,
it'd be
a snake eyes, yeah.
Yeah. So Bayley pulls Sasha off of the top turnbuckle for a belly to Bayley as the first pin on her side, which made it 1-1 with 18 minutes remaining. And then we had Sasha swinging Bayley from the apron into the side of the steps, which I thought was really
harsh.
Yeah,
because she goes for that drops kick from the other side to the other side, and she catches her, which shows the strength of Sasha also.
Yeah, very strong. And then she winds up whipping Bailey over and over again into the same steel steps. And in the midst of doing this, she screams at Izzy. For anyone who doesn't know who Izzy is Bailey's number one fan. She's always at ringside right by the steps where she's going to climb up dressed in all Bailey attire. Mm-hmm. So she screams at Izzy, and then she goes back into the ring for another cover and kick out. And then she throws her out of the ring again and then into the LED board towards the back.
Yeah. And
as she's going towards the LED board, we see that Izzy's already wiping back tears from the ass beating that Bailey's taking. And then on the way back to the ring, she takes Izzy's headband and goes into the ring and starts dancing around wearing Izzy's headband. And then throws the headband back down towards Izzy. And this girl is crying. She's in tears at this point. She's hugging her mother. Her mother's holding her close. Like, she's literally, like, legit crying. I've never seen Sasha heal it up like this before. Like, the way she affected that little girl, the way Izzy was affected, just added to the atmosphere. I couldn't even believe it, man. It was incredible. And then on to add insult to injury, you have Izzy crying hysterically, her mother coddling her. And we have Bailey getting counted
Bailey
out.
Pretty much knocked out at the top.
Yeah, so she gets counted out. So it was really like this big dramatic moment. And then there was a few other crazy things. At one point, Sasha had Bailey in like a Boston Crab type deal, and then she brought
it up. That was the Walls of Jericho, man.
Again, I was going to say she brought it up high like the Walls of Jericho, except she didn't put her knee on her face. She was just stomping on her arm and face.
If she puts the knee on the face, then it's considered the Lion Tamer. The Walls of Jericho is the one where it's just pretty much an elevated Boston Crab.
Right. But she had her up like if it was the Walls of Jericho, because normally the Walls of Jericho that he does is a lot more like a Boston Crab. Now, he doesn't bring them all the way up like that. So it was somewhat almost a Walls of Jericho, almost a Lion Tamer. And Bailey grabs the bottom rope, breaking the hold, and Sasha grabs her legs to apply it again. And Bailey reverses it into a head scissors and covers her. So it's 2-2 with 12 minutes left, and Bailey spears Sasha into the corner, hits her with two running back elbows, gives her the spinning...
Cactus Jack elbow.
Yeah, exactly, the Cactus Jack elbow. And then she gives her the spinning back elbow off of the top rope. Bailey suplexes Sasha up onto the turnbuckle into a tree of woe. And gives her a running springboard elbow into the corner.
Bailey runs off the stairs on the outside and does a clothesline to Sasha. Sasha kicks her back into the wedge of the stairs. Sasha does the suicide dive into the belly-to-belly on the outside.
Right. I thought that was a really nasty spot, too, because she dives through the middle rope very aggressively, and then Bailey catches her. And then just gives her a belly-to-belly right on the outside floor. And there was at one point Bailey does like a Kurt Angle type move where she jumps up to meet Sasha on the top turnbuckle and gives her the belly-to-belly.
The belly-to-belly.
Straight down. And she goes for the cover, but Sasha gets her foot on the rope, and then Bailey puts her back onto the top turnbuckle. And Bailey gives Sasha that reverse hurricane rana that she does.
That shit was beautiful.
Yeah, very well done. And then Banks lands on her feet. Sort of, because she falls and sort of lands on her ass, but then she hits her with her own belly to Bailey onto the bank statement. But Bailey fights her way out of it. And then she winds up spiking Sasha's fingertips against the mat. And Sasha, basically tries to do the backstabber for the bank statement, but Bailey reverses that into her own submission hold there.
Yeah, I didn't even know what to call that. It looked like a Rings of Saturn, but she was mainly holding the finger that she just spiked.
Yeah, we'll get the exact technical name of that. And they basically after that, Sasha tapped out at the very last second. She tapped out with her feet, or she said, "I give up. I couldn't see clearly." But she taps right at the very end, which ends the match. And it was a super dramatic match. Like, Triple H came out and Stephanie came out and the whole NXT arena. They brought them flowers. Sasha broke down on the top of the ramp crying. And you know, it was very emotional for everyone. It was really a wrestling match. You know, this
Sasha didn't keep her flowers, by the way. In an update that I got, she actually went back to Izzy and apologized for everything and gave her the flowers.
Aw, breaking kayfabe. But yeah, it was really cool, man. This was like one of those really incredible, really noteworthy things. It's good to go see that match. You don't have to go watch the whole event. The event was good, but what really stood out here was the main event more than anything.
Yeah, man, I got emotional at the end of that, too.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. Those girls worked their asses off, man. There's nothing like it. And then Bailey had some afterthoughts that she put on social media where she said, "I've been trying to find the words to express how I'm feeling after TakeOver, and I can't quite describe it, My 10-year-old self is freaking out at the thought of being a part of WWE history. But even back then, I never imagined having as much support as we did going into the match and after. From everyone. From the company, our peers, and most importantly, the fans. As much as I dreamt about this, I couldn't have dreamt up a better person to share this with. I couldn't have done it without Sasha. We share the same passion to go above and beyond our hopes and everyone's expectations. This is only the beginning. So
cool
main event. I liked it. Everything was well done, man. Everything was cool. I had a lot of fun with this.
And it's funny because I was watching it with my wife, and I was like, man, I normally hate Iron Man matches, but I can't wait to actually see this match go down.
Yeah, it was such a great thing. Really cool. Better than that movie that you mentioned. What was that movie again?
Chernobyl Diaries.
Chernobyl Diaries. Sounds so so lame. Just the name alone. All right, so we're going to wrap up. Let's run Raw. We don't have to talk too much about everything that happened on Raw. Let's not be crazy here. Just a few noteworthy things I want to mention. Jimmy Uso made his return, and he faced Kevin Owens on main event. Obviously, Kevin Owens went over. Jay's still out, so I think they just did that to give Jimmy something to do.
Mm.
Raw was good. Go and watch it. We're not going to call the whole thing here. The whole theme of it was Triple H and Stephanie being delayed on a plane and Kane assuring them that everything is okay. But in the meantime, Kane's booking a lumberjack match against Rollins versus him, and Triple H and them don't realize it until later in the show. Yeah, I'm not going to really call all of the matches. I don't know if there was anything really interesting. We had New Day versus Orton and Ambrose. I thought that was an interesting polar opposite of SmackDown, because on SmackDown it was Reigns and Orton, and they got along, but on Raw, it's Orton and Ambrose, and they don't get along. And I think that smart story building on having Reigns be the middle guy that's going to keep the two getting along and playing the mediator role when they do face the Wyatts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was really cool. I found the Nikki versus Naomi match humorous only because just before that match went on, they showed a really intense video package of the NXT TakeOver main event of Bayley versus Sasha. So it's kind of like we're seeing this video, and they had like this hard music. It was like, and then right after it ends, it's like, ding, ding, ding. And it's Nikki versus Naomi. I just thought it's like, that's really horrible that happened to them.
It's like, now top that. Like, they didn't come out to intros, right?
Yeah, you know, it's almost like if you and I did like a garage band, and then just before we're gonna go on, they play Metallica. You know, and it's like, well, fuck, we're gonna have to follow that. Thanks a lot, jerks. So, there was one bad spot. Sasha swept Brie off of the announce table when Brie was up there getting everyone riled into a "We Want Sasha" chant. Okay, but yeah,
it was "We Want Sasha." She was mocking the crowd because they were pretty much chanting it for the entire match.
Yeah, and then she took a nasty bump because Sasha swept Brie off of her feet, and she falls from the announce table and lands on the floor next to it in one fluid motion with nothing breaking the
floor. I'm assuming she was supposed to land on the table, and it wasn't supposed to be a big deal, because Nikki does get the win in the match, and then she just like rolls out the opposite end and starts going up the ramp like, oh, my sister's fine, like, or just like, fuck my sister. I got my W.
Yeah, Brie looked like she was trying to tough it out, like she looked like she was in a little bit of pain there, you know? You know you fucked up, right?
Like, what?
Oh, man. And then we had what led me to eating that piece of shit candy. We had
that awkward Paige segment.
They did the Payday's most unconventional diva, which Paige was awarded. And Paige was all emotionally overwhelmed by being Payday's most unconventional diva. And then she healed it up and brought up how at least someone's giving her recognition, because they don't give her recognition for that diva's revolution that she's also responsible for. And then she pickpockets Byron Saxon's Payday. And Byron Saxon, she was doing you a favor. That fool is going to eat a Payday.
Yeah.
You know, on top of everything that Paige is going through, now she's going to have to eat that shit candy.
I'm pretty sure she threw that in the trash as soon as the camera shut off.
Yeah, how dare they have Byron Saxon have that in his suit and then Paige pickpockets it. Neither one of them are going to eat that nasty shit. They're not going to fool me anymore about that. WWE, pick some good candies. There's regular candies out there. Get M&M's. Be regular. Dude, why is it always something weird, man? I can
picture her doing what you did, where you took a bite and she was like, what the fuck? This can't be that bad. And she took a second bite and just, like, threw it in a bin.
I felt like my taste buds were curling as it was nearing my mouth, man. Like, it was more nasty than I expected. It was just like the wrong mix of chemicals.
I warned you.
Mess, man. There was this story of this one dude who, when he was really poor, he used to live off of just eating Paydays as his meals.
Jesus.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Game of Thrones spoiler alert, but they would have found me hanging from a tree like a certain person's wife. Fucking kidding me, man. condemned to paydays in TNA. Imagine that. You gotta sit here and watch nothing but Impact.
I feel like if there is a heaven and a hell and we were to go to it, that would be it.
We also give you the sausage McMuffin, but we only serve it at dinner. TNA, the sausage McMuffin, and the fucking payday. Oh, man. So we have Cena versus Ziggler, and they mentioned that John Cena was jet lagged because he was at Saudi Arabia. But what I don't like about that is I bet that there are other people that came out before Cena that were also on that tour, and they didn't mention that they were jet lagged.
And I mean, it's just like how you have people that do the charity work and they don't mention
the Make-A-Wishes and stuff. You see what I mean? That's the disconnect, and I think that's why they have Cena haters. Like, I don't mind Cena. You know, I think he actually does work well, and he's a good wrestler. But stop making him so epic. It's just too much, you know? And then in the middle of the match, there's a marriage proposal, and Cena acknowledges that the girl said yes, and then the fans start chanting, she said yes, she said yes.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. At the same time, I was like, I would never have proposed at Raw. Yeah, like, if I was going to do something like that, it would be at WrestleMania.
Yeah, Ziggler took a DDT. Well, he DDT'd Cena off the top rope. That looked really good.
Very sick-looking DDT, yeah.
And then Cole mentions that these two guys are hurt, but you never hear either of them complain, though. I just thought that was an interesting little thing to throw in there.
I mute Cole out when he speaks now. Like, I just block out the whole commentary.
Yeah, and I thought that Ziggler spot, the reversal of the AA in the air into a Famouser, looked really good. Really awesome match, lots of false finishes. But like most of his matches, it ended with the AA out of nowhere. And I don't want to downplay the match, it was pure entertainment, but I just wish that didn't have to always go down that way, you know?
I was literally like talking to another friend during that match, and I went into my whole booking mode. I would have booked it that John Cena would have lost the match.
Well, I mean, because he's leaving soon, but he's not leaving for another couple of weeks.
No, have Cena lose the match. Well, I guess. But have Cena lose the match. Play it off like he got injured while he was, before he lost the title. Ziggler gets the title because this whole Lana Rusev thing has been brought into light. Now you can have Ziggler move on and try to like make passes at Nikki backstage. And then like you'd have to turn Ziggler heel, obviously. Have it be revealed that he purposely tried to injure John Cena so he could get him out of the picture and try to get his hands on Nikki. And then have John Cena come back in, 6 or 8 months, whatever it is, whatever time it is that he's done doing his thing, to come and try and reclaim the title.
It's only like 6 weeks, not months, but he still has a couple of weeks before he's going.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know exactly when it was.
He doesn't go until the 26th. He has exactly 13 days since we're up here and it's like fucking 4 a.m. But yeah, he has about 13 days now.
Okay.
So yeah, moving along, we had the Dudleys against the Ascension. They doomsday device one guy and they 3D the other. The end.
The match went as expected.
Yeah.
It's the Ascension.
Yeah, I don't really want to call the rest of these. We have Cesaro and Neville against Sheamus and Barrett. You know, decent match. Neville gets pushed into the ropes almost at 619 setup style and winds up getting bull hammered from the outside by Barrett when the ref isn't looking for the pin. Roman Reigns went on to do a really boring promo. That's when you and I first started discussing the payday in text. Like, I'm talking about the payday and all of a sudden, I'm like, when the fuck did Roman Reigns get out here? But yeah, the fans are booing him and saying boring, and he's like, this isn't boring, this is real life, but it isn't. And the fans were just turning on him because his promo's boring.
The only thing I liked about that whole promo is that he didn't buckle under the pressure of them booing him. And like, it seemed like he tried to become himself. Like, he did break out of his character and he became more of himself and tried to save it.
Yeah, sure. Good for him. But,
it didn't work because even Bray coming down at the end, and Bray pretty much, I felt like it was a jab. Like, he was in character, but he was pretty much saying, like, you wanted to come out and do this promo on yourself, so nobody's to blame but you.
Yeah, and Reigns Superman punches Strowman to the ringside and gets him counted out. And the funny thing is that when Strowman's raging out and throwing chairs, one of the chairs was wrapped around Michael Cole's wires, so it rips his headset off of his head as he throws the chair. And you just see it kind of go, yoink! And like, and you hear Michael Cole's voice sort of do it with it, like he's kind of like in the middle of talking and calling a match. And like, he goes away like that. Like, the whole fucking moment was just priceless. That happened, man. It was worth it just to have that. And then the Wyatts try to jump Reigns, but he gets away, and they start chanting Husky Harris. I can't believe they still remember Husky Harris.
Yeah.
Bray Wyatt's original gimmick.
I only remember Husky Harris because there's something I was watching earlier on in the week, and they showed when John Cena went to the locker room and jumped him.
And you know what? I hate to say it, but they almost make Bray Wyatt look like a comedic character because then he leans over the ropes, you know, all evil the way he normally does, and he goes, follow the buzzards. But Roman Reigns is within arm's reach of him, so he slaps him. So it's like, follow the buzzards. You know, like...
like, shut up.
Like, shut up. It's just really messed up. Like, don't humanize him. Him and Rusev have both been being humanized a lot lately. Like, the Rusev-Lana stuff, I'm glad it's finally over. They broke up, and, you know, Lana said, I seen you. They mixed the kayfabe in, which is what you didn't like. The fact that Lana and Rusev really got engaged, they had Summer Rae react to that and say, I saw this on the internet, and I hate you, and blah, blah, blah. So that's over with. But you see how humanized Rusev is now? Just to give you an example, he fought Ryback on SmackDown, and Ryback beat him clean, and then the same match happened tonight. So it's kind of like, yeah, they don't. This is a guy who used to be undefeated that was like a threat that people knew they were going out there and they might get their ass whooped, but they were going to try their hardest anyway. This was a guy that Mark Henry and Big Show, they were both like buddies that were like tag teaming, you know, almost like, now you're going to go out there and try, friend, and I'll be there supporting you.
Oh, right.
You
know what I mean?
And now this motherfucker just gets thrown around. He seems very, very normal. They definitely humanized him a little too much. I don't know where that's going or how they're going to fix it. I guess they realized that they broke it, so that's why they're trying to fix it with the TMZ thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rest of this, there wasn't really anything big to call. I mean, we had Kevin Owens and Kalisto. We had Charlotte and Becky against Bree and Fox. Not going to talk too much about those. Go check them out if you're curious. Then we had the Lumberjack match, which was Rollins against Kane. And at this point, Triple H told Kane that he cannot be in the match. And he said, oh, I won't be in the match. And WWE, not being creative at all, did the obvious thing and had the Demon Kane come out.
I literally sat here with my wife again, and I was like, watch, I bet you. I thought they were going to do it where Kane was going to, they was going to have him sitting backstage. And he was like, I've just been informed by Triple H that I can't be in the match. So I found a suitable replacement, but they ended up doing that as a backstage segment. And then when we came back, Kane came out as the Demon Kane.
Yeah, if they're going to do it, I don't mind the storyline, but you have to be more creative with the Demon Kane, Corporate Kane dynamic. You can't just keep playing the same joke. Technically, haha, wink, wink. Like, all right, we get it. Now you got to evolve this shit a little bit.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool things I liked was at one point when Kane confronts Big Show, he gives that vintage head tilt that the classic Kane used to give.
When like he used to have the full mask.
Yeah, he tilts his head and then he strikes him. I thought that was really cool. Vintage Kane right there. And, you know, it did what any lumberjack would do. Like, violence ensued, chaos ensued. Everybody was in the ring, heels and baby faces, all beating each other up. Which
threw me off, because it was like in a lumberjack match, so the lumberjacks can get in the ring, attack you, and then the ref doesn't call the DQ on that, because the ref was literally standing in the corner watching all this go down.
Who cares? Like, now with the podcast, we were 15 minutes overtime, and everyone just wanted to fucking leave. So they just said, whatever, we're just going to do whatever here. And it ended with the pedigree, the attempted pedigree of Rollins being reversed into the tombstone, right?
I thought that was a cool reversal, by the way, yeah.
Yeah, it looked very good. It was a decent Raw. There was nothing wrong with it. Sometimes I feel like it runs a little too long, and I don't want less of the stuff that we're seeing. I want less of the stuff in between. I don't want to see the payday. I don't want to eat that nasty candy. Don't advertise that shit to me. Take a lot of those little breaks in between that you're using and just consolidate the show. Give us the same amount of content, but maybe a little bit less time. There's way too much shit going on there.
Use it to storytell, not sell product.
Yeah, exactly. Like NXT did. NXT TakeOver and all of the NXTs every Wednesday are very rewarding. So, yeah, that's it. We covered everything, man. Well, we covered everything that we wanted to cover.
Yep.
Whew, that was a long, crazy one, right?
Mm-hmm. No destiny for me tonight.
Yeah, no, I feel you, man. It's really late, but I'm glad that we took care of this and we were very thorough about it. There was a lot to talk about. There's going to be nights like that. You know, this was definitely one of them. But I enjoyed it. I'm enjoying the NXT. I enjoyed all the other stuff, the gaming that we're talking about. We'll keep you guys updated on the dashboard and any other news that we hear about stuff coming out. You know how we do. Maybe we'll show up on the other shows. Yeah, tomorrow maybe we'll stream or do something else, something non-wrestling related, right?
Yeah. You know me, I've been playing a lot of Rock Band. We didn't touch on that, but I'll probably do that.
Yeah, we'll talk about some Rock Band next week. I definitely have to pick that up, too. That's not on my immediate list, but it's something that I always play. So, I want to be a part of that for sure. But we're getting close to that WWE, so I'm probably going to pre-order mine tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll probably do that. I'll go take a shower, then go do that, and then call it a night.
Yeah, I barely played the other WWE games, so what I might start doing, guys, I might start Twitch streaming myself, trying to get the achievements from the story mode or whatever. I'm going to wrap up with it a little bit, get some closure before it's time to move up to the next game, get some of the rust off. So feel free to come check out our streams, try to do some gaming a little bit more often in between the week. It'll be fun. Anyway, on that note, we are out of here.
See ya.